people. It's the Starship Pro Con Show with Anna DeVlantis, and we are lucky to be here today.
What a day to be in Chicago.
I just want to say. Yeah. Yeah. It was, well, it was a bit of a holy mess downtown, obviously. We've got protesters protesting the president. CTU decided to take a day off of the protesting.
There were enough protesters out today.
Right. They sent a memo to their people. Hey, if you want to protest, go to the Trump protest. That'll be kind of fun. Wear your red shirts there. You look just like Chance. Chances make, you know.
On Saturday Night Live, wore the red shirt, supporting the teachers.
Right. Make Chicago smart again, or whatever that was all about. Now, so the president was landed at O'Hare, choppered to Soldier Field. He, by the way, had more yards than Mitchell Trubisky through the air at Soldier Field.
I
would like to point that out.
Where the show's going today.
Yeah. Got two things
today.
References. I just got two things. That's all I got. I got two things.
Two things on your mind.
Yeah. Yeah. But
on a lot of people's minds.
We'll get to the Mitchell Trubisky stuff in just a second. But so the president choppered to Soldier Field, which is what they've been doing since the Obama era. They, you know, drop him in there, and then they have a motorcade, took him over very close to McCormick Place, went to McCormick Place, made the speech in front of the IACP, the International Association of Chiefs of Police. Then he got back in the limos. They Lakeshore drived and Wacker drived him over to his hotel, to the Trump Hotel. He had a fundraiser there with the Ricketts.
Mm-hmm.
Then, once again, back out to Soldier Field, helicopter up and out, and he's on his way back to Washington. And the way that Air Force One flies, he should be there in about 5 minutes, because it just it goes...
Not a long trip.
Yeah, very, very fast. So while he was at the speech, the IACP speech, he took a series of personal shots at Eddie Johnson, the Chicago police superintendent. And he questioned his morality. He questioned his values, I guess. Not really his morality, but his values. I want to be totally accurate about this. Irrespective of the lack of accuracy in some of the statements that the president made about the city of Chicago and about the crime rate in the city of Chicago and about some of the other things. And I get that this is a friendly audience. This is one of the things where the president and I line up in a lot of ways on law enforcement and the importance of taking care of police and the importance of being in a, you know, understanding the tough job that that is and making sure that there is respect for what they do and an understanding of what they do so that we're safer, right? I happen to agree with a lot of those things. I happen not to agree, however, with the attempt to make Chicago into a bad guy that the president keeps doing. And as a Chicagoan, we're all from here.
Yeah.
This is not the kind of... I just don't take kindly to this. And I get that we have a lot of problems. And I don't think ICE is really our biggest problem. I understand the sanctuary city thing he's trying to make. But I don't think that's really what the problem is here. And I also don't think that his crime statistics were even close to real for the city of Chicago. And by trying to make us the bad guy to downstate Illinois voters or to voters in Iowa or Wisconsin or Michigan who may not come to Chicago because they're afraid of big cities, I find that so unsettling, personally.
Well, he brought up that that anecdote about the mystery cop that we were all trying to figure out who that person was. What was it last time he talked about Chicago when he was still running for president?
Yeah.
And he said that there is a plan that you could just clean it up in 24 hours. It could be done in 24 hours, overnight. You could solve the city's crime problem. And if, I don't think any cop you talk to would say there's a one-day answer to the city's violence issue.
I want to take you back to that moment, because when he told that story originally in 2016, remember, he had just left Chicago after canceling a rally at UIC,
right,
which was not going to be attended by as many of his supporters as he thought. I mean, as we all recall what happened at that particular moment, which is almost exactly 3 years ago now, it was in the primary, I think, right? Wasn't it? So 3.5 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
He was going to go there, have a rally. It turns out that a lot of protesters had gotten in, and they realized that it wasn't going to be good. It was going to be sort of like him at the Nationals game last night, and they just canceled the thing, and he was wheels up. And then when he got back to wherever he was, to New York or wherever that was, he made the point. He was making the statement that this police officer told him he could solve this problem in a week. Now it's a day, because the president does like to, you know, he likes to play top this with himself. So now it's a day. Within a day, they could solve this problem. One would wonder what size of a paper shredder you'd need for the Constitution to solve it in one day.
That's right. You would think that you'd have to trample on a lot of rights and all civil rights and all kinds of rights in order to do the sorts of things that maybe they're suggesting there. But we don't even really know what the details of that plan would be, because we just talk about the sort of bragging nature of one cop who says he's got the answer.
And solve it in one day, which means you round everybody up and then you figure out who the criminal is, and then you let them out. The ones who aren't, maybe. If they look like a criminal, you might keep them.
Yeah, we've...
I mean, there's no good answer to that. And I know there's a lot of braggy people out there who got, you know, they have very simple solutions to very complicated problems. But this, I mean, this just goes back to, it's a story he likes to tell. It gets a lot of applause lines. I get it. I understand. From his perspective, I understand why he thinks that works. From my perspective as a Chicagoan, it ticks me off. Because that's not how this happens. This is not how, you can't fix this in a day. You can't fix this in a week. And yeah, there are a lot of problems. And there's internal problems too. Are there some problems in the Chicago Police Department? Sure. Are there some problems in the community writ large? Yes. Are there generations of young men, and now some women, but primarily young men, being born into and trained up in the ways of the gang? Absolutely. Is that your primary problem? Absolutely. How do you address that with police only? No. But the idea that you could just run over them and put them all in custody and figure the whole thing out later, which is the only solution he could be talking about. And I know it sounds good. It makes people feel better, makes people feel safe. But I expect more out of the president of the United States, whomever it happens to be. Ben Bradley is going to join us here in a second. We're going to fact check some of the other things that the president said while he was here about the city of Chicago, because Channel 9 has been doing that today. And we will get right back. That's WGN-TV, by the way, in case anybody's wondering. Get right back to that. But first, let's find out what's happening on the roadways. Here's Lauren Lapka.
For the News at 10, watch WGN. Micah Mater, Joe Donlin, Dan Ronan, Chicago's most trusted meteorologist, Tom Skilling, of course. For TV News at 10, watch Chicago's very own WGN-TV.
And keep listening after 4:30 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Hawks take on the Canucks Thursday, November 7th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com or tune in every Monday. I would say, and tune in every Monday all season long to win a pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks take on their rivals. And hopefully they will start, as of last night, a winning streak.
That's
Ben
right.
Bradley joins us right now from the WGN-TV newsroom. The president was here, and the president was doing dirt to Chicago today, Ben.
Man, he was on fire today, repeating some of his greatest hits or greatest shots at Chicago that he first started leveling back when he was a candidate. Remember, he was supposed to be in town for a big rally at UIC, and right. The Secret Service said the security situation was precarious, and he canceled. And ever since then, he has just been on a roll, and every chance he gets, takes a shot at Chicago. And this was no exception. His first visit since taking office, he immediately launched into a takedown of Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson for shunning the president's speech. What we looked at were some of the president's oft-repeated lines about our city. And we wanted to kind of go in depth on whether or not they're accurate or not. One of the things he said today was, and I quote, "Over the last 2 years, violent crime in America's major cities has dropped, unlike here, by 10%. So, depending on where you put the emphasis in his statement, he seemed to be suggesting violent crime hasn't dropped here. It has. Could you argue it hasn't dropped by 10%? It hasn't. It's dropped by 8%. That's overall violent crime. But what the president fails to acknowledge and has failed to acknowledge over several years now is the progress that Chicago has made in combating murders. Mm-hmm. For example, year-to-date, murders down 11%. Over the last 3 years, murders are down 31%. And, of course, you put these facts out on Twitter, as we did, and immediately you get blown up by...
Russian bots.
By people who say, oh, see, what, you're saying that's okay? It's okay to have 413 people murdered in Chicago? No.
No.
We're not. We're just saying it's important to start from an informed, fact-based perspective. The other claim the president made today was that Chicago is more dangerous than Afghanistan.
Right.
He said Afghanistan is a safe place by comparison. That's true, he said. It's not true. In fact, while, you know, Afghanistan doesn't have the FBI doing its uniform crime statistic reporting, so numbers are hard to come by, and it's even foggier when you try to decide, okay, well, who counts as a murder in a war-torn country like Afghanistan? Do civilian deaths only count? What about combatant? What about military-aged men who are killed, etc.? The BBC actually sent a team in and did a huge amount of research. They looked at 1 month, this past August, and they found 2,307 people died in Afghanistan in August alone.
Wow.
1 month in Afghanistan does not compare to 1 month in Chicago, as bad as our crime is. And then my personal favorite. The president also talked about that mysterious super cop he's been talking about since he was a candidate. Yep. And provided.
We all thought that was Gary McCarthy.
We did. Now he sort of provided more details.
Yeah, there was
a little bit more.
He said he apparently was the head of the motorcycle unit. Had a very, very.
Let's play this. So yes. Let's put this through the Rokon show with Anna DeVlantis, detective agency, as we try to do an identity search.
I asked him, "What do you think the problem is?" And he said, "There's no leadership from the mayor. And there's none at the top of the police department. They're afraid to do anything." He said, "We have great police, sir, the best in the country." And you all feel that about your own police. But he said that. He said, "But we don't have the leadership at the top." So sad.
So sad. Now, Gary McCarthy was the superintendent at that time.
And Gary McCarthy did have a deep, booming voice. The president shared today.
Yeah, you know, we always thought that. But then Gary McCarthy came out and denied it.
Well, and McCarthy publicly wasn't the head of the motorcycle unit. Presumably, Donald Trump would have known who the police superintendent was at that particular
time. Since Gary was from New York.
Exactly. Yeah. The other interesting thing that we point out in this fact check is the Trump administration has sent additional resources to combat crime in Chicago. That's one thing that the FBI and the U.S. Attorney's Office will tell you. We've covered it. The president really didn't go into it today, but to give him credit, the Trump administration has sent in 12 new federal prosecutors just to work out of the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of Illinois.
Right.
And federal firearms prosecutions up 44% in Chicago.
So that's great.
That stuff makes a difference.
It does. There's no question.
And the Trump administration and the president deserve credit for that.
However, that's true. That's true. However, I still think that Donald Trump is the president of the United States of America. Chicago is in the United States of America. And there are a lot of hardworking folks here, including a lot of people who voted for him, who respect the work that the Chicago Police Department has done, understand the bigger, broader issues here, and I'm very certain don't appreciate the city being covered in one swath here.
That's what our political discourse is today. It's black or white. It's you're for America or you hate America. And we see that play out. You know, Roe, you're a great example of it. You're a guy who supports the Chicago Police Department, has raised money for officers to protect them. That doesn't mean you can't acknowledge and say that there are a few people who have caused a stain on the legacy and the reputation of the Chicago Police Department. It's not black and white, right?
No.
And the same is true about cities. The same is true about political candidates and political parties.
This just seemed to get so personal because Eddie Johnson, who was the host of the convention, being in his home city, the other police chiefs, decided to skip the speech portion. And then his own, the rank and file, didn't like that idea either. They said he should have been there.
The FOP didn't like it.
The FOP representing the rank and file.
And the head of the FOP, the Chicago Lodge of the FOP, was on the tarmac to meet the president today.
Yeah, he was the only local official to stand at the bottom of the stairs and greet the president. That's not today to say they didn't have other supporters kind of in the traditional Penn area to greet him. But, yeah, it was interesting. Kevin Graham was there to greet the president. But to your point about, you know, the FOP supporting Eddie Johnson or not. That was a vote of no confidence taken in Eddie Johnson by the FOP's board of directors, not necessarily the rank and file. Okay. But the FOP is there to represent.
Hey,
they
listen,
are.
Listen, I know, you know, the one thing having... Thank you for mentioning, Ben, that I do a lot of work with this. Having been around the police department professionally and now as a member of the board of the Police Memorial Foundation for the last decade, the one thing I have learned is that if the police are, they're angry at criminals, they're more angry at their bosses.
And, well, like all of us, right? One more way they're like journalists.
Yeah, exactly. So this whole idea... That even Gary McCarthy, you know, Gary McCarthy was constantly under, you know, assault by the FOP and by some people in the rank and file. Listen, it's
remember
a big,
the FOP making a big deal about whether Gary McCarthy could or should wear the uniform?
Right. 13,000 men and women in Chicago Police Department. Right. And I also want to point this out. This really, I got to say, I don't want to get emotional about this, but this is like a very, very sore point for me. This whole idea of the problem in Chicago are criminal aliens and all the things that he was saying here. The vast, the largest group of individuals by ethnicity in the recruiting class for the Chicago Police Department over the last 5 years have been Hispanics, male and female, about 60-40, male to female. It's personally galling to me that Chicago's Latino community is getting targeted here because it is one of the most vibrant, one of the most economically self-sufficient, one of the most amazing communities of its kind in the entire United States of America. And I just don't like it. I just don't like this broad swath.
Broad brush.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much, Ben. Thanks. Appreciate it. Thanks for doing what you do. That's the last time I'll say that to you. Right now,
Kim's got recording.
Kim's got the WGN Radio News.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We're moving on to talk about some other things affecting Chicago right now. And we've got the teacher strike continues, even though you didn't see the striking teachers out there today. We had a number of protesters. There were enough protesters downtown, and some of the former CTU protesters did join the Trump protests right here by our studio at Trump Tower.
That sign I saw today,
what'd
Trump puts ketchup on his hot dog.
Ooh,
burn. Sick burn.
Sick burn.
I just have to say that I thought that Chance the Rapper, he handled all of the outward promotion for the CTU on Saturday night.
Boy, did he ever. He even had some of the cast members come out at the end there wearing the red shirts.
Yeah, those who have Chicago connections.
Oh, that's interesting. So they were supporting the teachers union.
Can I share my favorite poster?
Yeah.
Sure.
Trump 2020 ? I'd rather chug Malort.
Wow.
Very Chicago-like.
Wow.
Very Chicago.
Oh.
The Malort.
Oh.
Do they even know about the Malort anywhere else? Has that caught on? Because I know it's a Chicago liqueur. Maybe that's too
good. That's
too,
way too,
much,
too fancy.
Too fancy for,
not a
for something like a Malort that smells like sweaty gym socks.
Like Al Baghdadi's underpants, which apparently was how we were able to identify him. That's a separate issue.
Yeah,
we'll get into that. A.D. Quigg from Crane Chicago Business is joining us right now. Are we any closer, A.D., to a solution here for the CTU?
With the CTU, the latest I've heard is they're still pretty far apart. The union says that they're $38 million apart, but schools officials say that's closer to $100 million, and they're both kind of accusing each other of having funny math.
Now, isn't that ironic for teachers?
It is. You would think this would be in alignment. You'd have, like, the budget people at the city, and you'd have the math teachers, and you'd get it all sorted pretty easily with a lot of sophisticated math in the room.
Carry the three.
So there's one sign of hope, and that is that it appears that the Board of Education, the city side, and SEIU Local 73 are close to a deal. They still have to ratify this agreement, but it would call for a 16% raise over 5 years, extra pay for special education classroom assistants, bus aides, and custodians. But again, it has to go through the ratification process, and we saw SEIU folks joining at the picket lines in support of CTU, who still does not have a deal.
And let me ask you, the SEIU piece, that particular local, who do they represent?
This would be support staff at schools, so special education, classroom assistants, bus aides, custodians, and security folks. So that's about 7,500 employees at Chicago.
All related to the schools?
Yes.
Not related to non-CPS? duty.
Right. So there was they were also part of the striking force at the beginning of this, representing folks of the Chicago Park District, but they reached a deal before they actually went on strike.
Got it.
Yeah. It just, I had so much hope that this weekend would be it, you know, and I think it just seemed like going into the weekend, there were a few positive signs. I took it as a very positive sign that the CTU didn't want to say too much. And it felt to me as if that was because if they said too much, it might impact the negotiations that seemed like they might be close to coming to some resolution. But the rhetoric today was not very reassuring. You heard the CTU president, Jesse Sharkey, say, if the mayor is trying to test our resolve, something like, good luck. I would not suggest that she try to do that, that we have a lot of resolve and we will withstand this. And then the mayor looked more frustrated than I ever remember her looking on this as she stepped to the podium and said they don't seem to want to come to yes.
Get to yes, right. So this was an interesting weekend where we saw hours and hours and hours of negotiations, and it wasn't until 8 p.m., 8:45, 9 o'clock last night that we heard from both sides, and both sounded pretty equally frustrated with each other, but still committed to working. And then today we saw students and folks in red basically lining the outside of City Hall, continuing to protest. A lot of high school students I saw chalking the sidewalk outside of City Hall, and then eventually coming inside to the lobby to kind of chant and yell to make a deal for their teacher. So the heat is still on. We have now surpassed the length of the strike under Mayor Rahm Emanuel. We asked Lori Lightfoot if this was, you know, she's been a litigator for a long time, been an attorney for 30 years. We asked her last week if this was the toughest negotiation she had been in, and she said no. I would be interested in hearing that answer today.
It's a good point.
Well,
that's a great point.
You wonder if the president's visit sort of took them out of the headlines for the day, the CTU out of the way. So maybe this was a moment where they want to build momentum back for attention tomorrow or even Wednesday. And remember, if this drags on, I know that this seems like a very small issue I'm about to bring up, but I don't think it's small because I think it has bigger emotional ramifications for the Chicago Public School students. If this goes on beyond tomorrow, Simeon High School doesn't get to play in the state playoffs here. And I know that's, you know, it's one school, it's one thing, but that has ramifications for every student athlete in the CPS, because it's just it will create an emotional barrier for those people who really do look at, especially the, you know, the best of the student athletes in the Chicago public school system, who look at athletics as a way out, as a way to be able to maybe go on to the next level, get a college education, maybe become a professional athlete, whatever it happens to be. Because, you know, the Chicago public school system has created a lot of athletes over the years that have played at certainly the college level and then on to the pros. So you wonder, is there any way that this moment, and I know it sounds simple, but I just know that these things have emotional reverberation. Is there any way that they could just sit down and say, hey, listen, this is enough is enough is enough in terms of these kids being out, the public safety issues, all the things that go along with this, that comport to this bigger, bigger, bigger issue. Is there a way to turn it?
I mean, we'll see. A lot of these come down to pressure from the parents at the end of the day. And of course, this is academics are a big deal. Athletics are a big deal. I spoke to some of the students on the picket lines today saying, you know, we're not getting the AP prep that we need. We have special education folks and parents who want to see their kids back in school in a structured environment again. I just don't know. It's every day I have kind of a different prognosis for how things feel and how things seem based on what both sides say in public. And we should find out in the next, you know, 20 or 30 minutes. There's been substantial progress. We usually find out at about 4 p.m. what will happen the next day. But I just don't know. It's different every day. And it's been tough for parents. I'm sure it's been very tough for teachers, too. I've talked to a lot of emotional teachers who say, I would much rather be in my classroom with my students. And, of course, it must be frustrating for the mayor.
And the students, of course, too. I mean, that's what you're hearing
absolutely.
From them
yeah,
so
absolutely.
Much. Like, hey, come on, you know, let's get this going. I mean, it's interesting. November 1st is the day when they no longer will be paying their health care. Isn't that right? The CPS does not have to pay their health care come November 1st if they continue to strike. That would be Friday.
Yeah, but
I
do you want
so, yes.
to go on like another 5 days? I mean, that's
no
that
one wants
ridiculous.
That. I'm just saying you're not seeing the signs yet of this that's letting up. Are there, have there been any more polls of parents in the system or any way of taking a pulse on how, if that has changed at all in terms of the support from parents of CPS students?
Not that I've seen publicly. I've heard a little bit from the mayor's team. They were out in the field with a poll a few weeks ago that was had a little bit stronger numbers for the mayor. The Sun-Times did a poll, I believe, 2 weeks ago. But what the mayor's team told me a few weeks ago was that they people have positive impressions of both the mayor and the union. And, you know, this was before things really started heating up. But really, the broader public wants a win for both sides. They want teachers to get what they want. They want a responsible solution that is cognizant of what taxpayers are going through at the moment. And they want a good outcome for kids. They want this to be a win-win. They don't necessarily see them as opposing forces. But I have no idea what that polling has looked like since we've seen this rhetoric heat up, since we've seen presidential candidates come into town and kind of voice their opinions, since we've seen, you know, Chance the Rapper on SNL. We've seen all of this kind of play out on Twitter and a lot of back and forth about who's being petty. I would love to see something something that reflects how much the tides have shifted in the recent days, even.
Yeah,
I'm not
too.
Even sure that any of that really matters, because we're 3 years away from another mayoral election. People will have forgotten about this. As long as it's a five-year contract, not a three-year contract, that I still think is a sticking point here. That's, I think, one of the movement points that they're not that is the final lever. And at the end of the day, it's really up to what the union members. How what pressure they're going to put on their union leadership, because I think the rest of us sit out here without a whole lot of influence in this. As a Chicago resident and taxpayer, I don't think I really have a voice in it. I would love to have, I mean, I have the voice that I, but whatever I'm saying here in this megaphone, it doesn't matter, because they're not going to listen to it. The CTU is not going to listen to it. SEIU is certainly not going to listen to it. This is really about levering the system at that point, and, you know, the rest of the city of Chicago, including the parents, because what difference? The parents are stuck. They're going to send their kids there regardless, right? The parents who want to send their kids to Chicago public schools because they're some of the best in the country are going to those that are the best in the country. They're going to do that because it was hard to get into those. And then those who are sending their kids to schools that aren't quite as good don't have a choice. So I just feel like these are power brokers at a level above where the rubber really hits the road.
I think parents still have, they could put pressure on it when this starts to really pain. I mean,
what do they do?
They can contact the CTU. They can start being using their voices on social media. It depends how where the frustration level gets. I saw a valet in my neighborhood. He opened up his car to go park a car, and he had his two small kids in the car. I'm assuming for most of the day. This was midday when I saw him, and I just think, well, what are all these parents doing? I know that they can go to the schools if they want to. There are some safe places for their kids to go, but they're still missing out on education, and it's still putting pressure on families to figure this stuff out day by day.
A.D. Quick, thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
A.D. Quick from Crane Chicago Business. Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roadways? Would you like me to tell you about the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom? Because that's where all the action's happening. It's coming your way at the top of the hour with Kim Gordon. All right, let's CTU still on strike. It does not appear that the two sides are any closer. Sometimes it's darkest before the dawn. That's what people like to say.
Could happen. You're right. I think it would be a good thing if that did happen. But just saying the rhetoric today didn't sound particularly promising when you heard what they had to say.
All right, let's go to the phones. 312-981-7200. And Cheryl, you're on WGN. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I've been an educator for 28 years. And from the teacher side of things, I would think parents would want this to go, unfortunately, as long as it needs to for the benefit of their children, because this is not about the money. Classroom sizes of 35 to 50 kids is unconscionable to me. I'm fortunate enough to be in a district where our class sizes are like between 18 and 23 with an aide in every classroom. So what kind of education are they going to get if they're in those huge classes without aides, without social workers, without nurses, without librarians? That's not a quality education. This has to be fixed now. The system is completely broken in the city, and it's unbelievable that we have such a world-class city with such a broken education system, in my opinion. I mean, to think that you're sending your child to a school that doesn't have a librarian, a nurse, that's not safe. I don't know how they've been allowed to get away with it for this long. But the teachers, I'm sorry. I know it's hard on the families. I can't imagine. I'm not involved in it, but from the teacher side of things, I don't see what choice they have. I really don't.
Well, there is there. Before we start to jump to conclusions here, because it's a little bit pocketed what we know about where the negotiations are.
Sure.
But I believe that some of those things have been addressed, that they've made, there's been momentum on that. I happen to agree with you about the nurse. Now, if there is a primary school and then a high school near each other or whatever it happens to be, you know, middle schools, and it, if you can have one nurse that's that can be at a school within a certain amount of minutes, right? I think that that's reasonable too.
But in this day and age, though, with kids with peanut allergies and anaphylaxis, like, to have a nurse, be there in 5 when you've got a kid going into anaphylactic shock, that's an awful lot of pressure to put on those classroom teachers. What, has everybody got EpiPens so they're prepared to help those children? That's terrifying.
I agree. I also think the issue of class sizes does resonate with a lot of parents and taxpayers alike. That one issue is something that, you know, if you spend any time in a CPS school or any classroom, you do see, if you have 34 kids in a class, how challenging that is. My sister taught in the schools. My mother worked in the Chicago Public Schools. You know, go in those schools and see what that's like. I get that piece of it. I just don't know how far they've moved already on that class size issue. I wish we did know.
Cheryl, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Take care.
All right, Lester, I've got about 30 seconds for you, but go right ahead.
30 seconds quick. I've been there, done that. I've negotiated, and I've been represented. I've been a school board president and been on a school board for over 40 years. And the way I negotiated with our teachers, now remember, I'm from a northwestern community. The way I negotiated with our teachers is we're all taxpayers. We're all parents. We all have kids in the school. And so it was, I put everything on the board. Everything was transparent. We never had a strike or a problem in 30 years. Everybody problem solved together to get the best result that we could, because the kids can't vote. We need to represent those kids.
Yeah. Lester,
so that's my comment.
Well, the one thing that is different here potentially than your experience is that the pressure points of the budget are very different here. And the taxpayers, even though I know in suburban districts it's a little bit different, there are a lot of taxpayers who don't want an increase in their taxes. That's pretty standard. But here, we're almost at a point where the government is going to the banks, the people who are doing the financing, that's where it's all falling apart here. And it's not even a matter of you know, is there wiggle room on it? Because there really isn't.
Okay, well, I've got to ask you a question.
Yeah.
Are there professional paid negotiators going on, or are these really truly members of the community doing the negotiation?
Oh, they're the same people.
Same people who handled it for the Emanuel administration, so they have experience doing this kind of thing.
These are highly paid lawyers,
but I do agree with you, Lester, that it is a failure.
That's not what I asked.
No,
I
know.
What I ask are the paid negotiators.
Yeah, I'm sure they are. Yes, that's exactly. And that's, you know, okay, that does make a big difference. Thank you, Lester. Appreciate the call. Mm-hmm. That makes a difference, but I don't think you're going to get that in Chicago. I don't think you're going to have an opportunity to necessarily have somebody else jump in there who is not getting paid by at least somebody. Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way next. Kim Gordon with the news in 2. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, we got tickets to give away this hour to the Blackhawks taking on the Canucks, right? Yep, on Thursday, November 7th, because the Hawks now leave town for a week and a half, and they're out most of the next 3 weeks out of Chicago. They had a ton of home games starting.
A nice stretch of home games.
Well, I wouldn't use the word
nice. No, in retrospect, didn't turn out to be nice.
Yeah.
The outcomes were not nice.
See, this was one of those moments where they had to play really well up front.
That's right.
And I think, I don't know what it is. I don't know. And I don't, but they won last night. Let's just start with, maybe once they get on the road, things will change.
You hope so.
I'm having a bad sports moment as a Chicagoan right now.
Okay, Ohio State.
I'm having, what did I just say? I'm having a bad moment as a Chicagoan.
I still don't feel as bad for you, because the rest of us are feeling the same pain, bro.
Bulls stink. Hawks off to a slow start. Bears atrocious.
And then the Packers, just to top things off, looking like rock stars last night. Like, we needed that to rub in our faces. Aaron Rodgers is amazing.
Oh,
his awful face.
Northwestern's having a rough year.
Yeah.
How about it?
I just,
one and six?
It's not just not good. It's just not good. Obradovich, OB, Ed Obradovich will be here at 4:37. Turn your volume down. Actually, you might not even need the radio to hear it. You might just put your ear to the ground.
Just open the windows.
Yeah.
He was on a roll, one of the best shows ever, if not the best show ever after this particular loss, because I think something just sort of hit and you felt like, what is there to be hopeful about?
Zero, zippity-doo-dah, nothing. Nothing. Just...
Went to the game, my mother-in-law, my daughter. I mean, we had a nice little family group out there because the tickets did come down a little bit. You were right about that. They did. Because it was the Chargers. We were supposed to beat the Chargers.
Yeah.
That didn't work out.
Okay.
We did not beat the Chargers.
Right.
And then we came back, turned the radio on, listened to OB, and wow. Whoa. They put on a better show than the Bears.
Bears had 26 first downs.
Save it.
Okay.
Well, come
on. I don't know what we're doing here. We're talking Bears or not. I'm fired up.
I can't. I can't.
You're mumbling along here. We're talking Bears or not.
No. We have baby steps. Okay, baby step. Because it's sort of a traumatic moment to bring up. You just can't just go right in and talk about it.
All right. Go ahead, Kev.
Are you telling me we can go ahead now?
I'm just telling Kev to go ahead.
I lost the moment. I'll save it for OB.
Okay. There was nothing. There was just nothing.
There was nothing
There's
to
like
hang on
to. Nothing to live for now. I mean, okay, sure, friends and family. I don't know. The sanctity of life. One of those things. But Sundays, you're taking 1/7, 14% of my week out now. And I can't enjoy other football when the Bears suck. I mean, when they really suck. It's very hard.
Fun fact, my mother-in-law, who's 85, came with us to the Bears game. I think it was her first Bears game ever. And secondly, she said the last time she was at Soldier Field, it was when General MacArthur addressed just Chicagoans post-World War II.
Whoa.
So that was a little history lesson. I was like, woo!
Well,
I had to Google that one.
You know what that was? That's when the guys reenacted the raising of the flag at Iwo Jima.
So it was a Those very guys moving
were,
moment.
Yeah, they were on tour doing that. As a war bonds deal. Wow.
Yeah.
That was one victory she saw. So she's
she
one
did.
And one.
She saw something. Yeah, one and one.
She saw one of America's greatest moments and one of Chicago's worst moments. Worst moments!
It was ugly.
Okay. I don't know. Somehow that was just reminding you that I have Blackhawks tickets
to give
away.
I don't know how we got there, but... Top of mind, I guess.
Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing for all the right reasons. Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and tune in every Monday all season long. Coming up at 4:30. After 4:30, we will have your chance for Bizarre for the tickets. Okay. All right. Can I, on the sporting world, there is this piece of legislation now that's coming up in Illinois that they've already done in California where they're going to make it okay for college athletes in Illinois to get endorsements.
Mm-hmm. That they can use their likeness and make money off of it.
Now, the one thing that stuck with me right here was, who are they talking about in Illinois? what college athletes are we discussing? I know that the Northwestern lacrosse, women's lacrosse team's pretty great, right?
They should get endorsements,
uh-huh.
I would think.
Are we talking football? Anyone?
Anybody come to mind?
Anybody? No. Nope.
I mean, I thought that this also allows athletes to not only, it's not like you're going to get a Nike shoe endorsement right out of the gates or anything like that, unless you're a LeBron James in high school or some kind of stellar standout athlete. Maybe Antonio Davis. Remember, didn't he play here at Northwest? I mean, the charter school, UNO charter school. But they're saying that you can't even now currently run a tennis camp on the side and call it your, the Rokon tennis camp. if you play tennis. I just assume you might have played tennis. Did you play tennis?
No. And one would just...
That's the sport I would give you. I don't know why. You came to mind for that.
I would wear tennis whites to school every day, but I wasn't particularly good at it.
But if you did, you couldn't profit off of that. There's so many different ways that they, you know, even in the summer, they could teach tennis and things like that. And some of that was banned if you wanted to participate in sports.
This is a good idea. I don't know. I like the idea nationally. I think that they have to pass like a federal kind of a deal here, because state by state, it's going to get awkward, right? Because what if they don't pass it in Alabama? What's going to happen there? Right? I mean, this is not a good situation that a lot of college athletes find themselves in for the big programs. But Illinois, it's kind of it's cute, but there really isn't a whole lot going on here that's going to, we ain't exactly Ohio or Alabama or Texas or California, you know, for that matter. There aren't programs here, Oregon, there aren't programs here that are really going to be demanding that sort of attention. Although Illinois is on a roll, they've won two in a row. Sorry, Lauren, but that's.
Go Lovey.
Yeah. And Lovey's the only one getting endorsements. And apparently he's getting one for a beard coloring or something like that.
He looks so different, doesn't he?
Like a beard trimmer, whatever he does. You know what? He looks like a guy who is on some sort of a protest with that beard. Looks like he's going to grow the beard and not eat until Illinois gets a bowl bid, which they're two games away from, right?
So one. They got four wins. You get the five, you're normally in a bowl.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. There you have it.
But currently, what are the rules in terms of an agent approaching a promising athlete in high school or college? Don't they have a lot of rules around that? Because this would make it so much easier, apparently, to get an agent at any time.
Right. You would be able to get an agent, and then the agent would be the one going out, Booby Darling, sweetheart, listen.
I got something for you.
Gatorade just called. They're not interested. These are the sorts of things that my agent says to me. He calls me every day to tell me who's not interested.
Yeah. But then there's someone who is, and it makes a difference. So
Snick has called. They said they're not interested.
So you'd be perfect for one of those, like, curb your hunger.
That's what I said. And they were like, no, not interested. Anyway, I suppose there are going to be, like, stipend kind of things, right, where car dealers or local businesses, let's just call them local businesses, but I know the car dealers do this in a lot of places, especially in college towns. So down in Champaign-Urbana or up in Evanston maybe, or the north side of Chicago, you might have, if you have a standout or a couple of standouts, but then it's just going to be player by player. I'm not opposed to this because these guys at some point will probably need to get paid to do what they're doing. I just think this is the medical marijuana camel's nose under the tent to eventually getting these guys paid all the way.
Well, here's an example, because he was the governor came on Rick Pearson's program here on WGN Radio, and so when he announced this, and he said that even music students at like Northwestern right now, they can't go and play music when they're not studying for money. That's restricted.
Huh? You mean if they're on a ride?
Yeah.
If they're on a musical ride.
Right.
But if they're paying full boat, they can go do whatever they want, right?
Yeah, then I don't know. They didn't make that distinction. They said that music students at universities like Northwestern can earn money by playing music when they're not studying, and that athletes should be given the same sort of right. So that's what they're saying. That athletes should be given the same sort of right to use their talent to do things like teach a tennis camp or to go out there and, you know, put their name on something where they're just offering lessons in their sport or something like that, which they can't currently do.
All right. Fine.
I mean, it seems kind of different because at least musicians are putting on a performance,
mm-hmm.
whereas, you know, using your likeness, you're not really doing anything, but yes, your image is being portrayed elsewhere. But I see that getting sticky because as a student athlete, you're also the image of a athletic program in school. So then you're kind of mixing images between a company and the school and the athletic program.
They say you can't conflict with any of the current sponsorships. So if your team or, you know, NCAA currently has one sponsorship, you can't kind of go with a competing sponsor. But that seemed to be the only rule in California.
I, See, again, there's just too much. It's going to be state by state. There's going to have to be a uniform situation, because the state by state situation will not, what will apply in California or Ohio or Texas is not going to necessarily apply here. And does it start with, can high school kids do it? I mean, that becomes a real question. Do you have to be 18? Obviously, in most cases, you have to be 18, but you only have to be 16 technically to have a job.
Mm-hmm.
15 with you know,
this
some
refers
sort of parental.
To college athletes, this legislation that the governor supports.
So if you're a college athlete, do you get the opportunity to go make money off of your likeness state by state? It should be a national thing. I think the president would be all for that. That seems like the kind of thing he could get behind.
Capitalism?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's got
side gigs,
right.
Making money on the side.
Now, the other question, though, is I think the bigger issue that they would like to guard against here is now the gambling is going to be legal. Kevin, when's that happening?
The gambling bill?
Yes. I mean, the gambling bill's passed, but I think they're thinking in Illinois by December, maybe January?
I've been hearing sometime next year.
So when that happens, then the college athletes, that puts a lot of pressure on them. And if people could actually affect something, especially in games like basketball, where mm-hmm. you know, one player can make a big difference in terms of an over-under or a spread, that certainly seems to me to be the weak point there.
Hmm. Could happen.
So
Boston College.
Do you have a cough? What happened?
Yeah, actually, a little bit. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just want it to be national, and I would like these kids not to have the same humiliation that I go through every day when I talk to my agent once they get an agent. My favorite thing is when my agent calls me at 3:15 in the afternoon.
Right.
I get a call. My phone lights up,
yeah,
and it's my agent.
Isn't there something you're doing at 3:15?
Yeah. And I have to explain to him, I'm on the radio. Oh, you are? Now, where are you on the radio? All right, let's check in with Lauren Lapkin,
right.
Find out what's happening on the roadways.
The live and local sound of Radio Chicago, 720 WGN.
How will this winter compare to last winter? Tom Skilling lays it out, his long-range forecast. It's tonight's cover story on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
Okay, that concerns me. You know why?
Why?
Because I was looking at the weather for the next couple of days. And as we head toward Halloween...
Yeah, it doesn't look great.
First of all, Demetrius, did you see... He's part of the Skilling squad.
Mm-hmm.
Demetrius Ivory. He's just essentially doing what Tom's telling him to do. Let's just be honest. I think that's what's going on.
He probably
on.
Has a mind of his own.
Oh, I'm sure he does. But he does not get an opinion of his own in the Skilling squad. Skilling?
I'd go with Skilling's forecast,
yeah.
too.
It's the top of the Mount Rushmore right there.
Mm-hmm.
There is flurries. Flurries in the forecast for tomorrow.
Yikes.
The F word.
I know.
Okay, that's just going to be in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Fine, but that is, you know what that does? That sets a whole tone. It sets a mood. It lets the birds and the bees and the trees and everything else know,
yeah.
Hey, this thing's
close
over.
Close up.
Done.
Close up shop.
Leaves are going to be falling. Right now, you're going to watch, in this week alone, all we need is like another rainstorm like we had on Saturday night, which is one of the craziest rain events I've ever seen.
It didn't
ever.
Really stop raining.
No,
it?
I mean, it was
all day.
Really bad. Another one of those, and all the leaves will be gone from all the trees.
And they, like, just turned.
Yeah.
Just turned.
And it's bang, just like that.
Why are we getting shorted on all the really good, like, seasons this year?
Like bears? Specifically
well, yes, like
bears.
Summer was extremely short. Spring didn't really seem to exist either.
Mm-hmm. Never does, really. Downtown, for sure. And then the fall, it's just we're moving. We're just moving here, people.
Yeah.
I always know that the leaves are on the ground around Halloween anyway, but then first week of November, and then the trees are all bare, and the light's low in the sky, and it's, you know, it's bourbon weather. That's what it turns into, my friends.
You don't ever have bourbon in the spring or
oh, yeah,
the summer,
no,
in
the summer
or in
yeah,
winter?
A lot. Yeah, but the point
this
is...
specific period of the fall.
Yeah, this is where it becomes a medical necessity as
right,
opposed
okay.
to just
right.
a
see what you're saying.
Light pastime. And then my sports team's not doing so well. And let's just face it, Ed Obradovich is going to be here in just a few minutes to tell us how he feels about how the bear season is going so far. I don't think you should miss it. But first, Kim Gordon, who is a Green Bay Packers fan, I should point out, has the news.
I'll tell you something, Nagy. If you don't loosen up and if you don't start playing big time football, I hope the fans in this town run you out. To me, I'm done with you. You're a head
coach. He should fire himself.
You are
he
not
should
a
fire
head coach.
Himself. Yeah, he should fire himself, OB. Be a man. Fire yourself.
One of the many highlights from the broadcast yesterday.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Got so many questions for OB.
Ed Obradovich joins us right now on the Super Celebrity Hotline. I'm sorry. I got nothing to say. I'm so beside myself about what I saw yesterday. I just knew it. There was a moment, honest to God, OB, when Pinheiro lined up for that kick. I thought, they don't deserve to win this game. I was actually conflicted about them winning this game because all of a sudden they're giving Trubisky all of this credit for being able to move down, running for his life for 15 yards. And they made, all of a sudden he became Tom Brady. He's awful.
Well, we're all, and I'm Kevin. I tell you what, it's just, it's going to get worse. And the thing that, that really, gets in my craw a little bit is how Nagy is handling himself as the head coach of the Chicago Bears. On that press conference after the game, he got a little feisty, a little testy with the reporters, just asking him questions of what went on. How could you be on a one-yard line and you have to settle for a field goal? How could you be on a four-yard line and not even try to score a touchdown, settle for a field goal? How could you be on a six-yard line going in, and again, you can't score a touchdown? And this has been all this past season and all of last year. We struggle to score a touchdown. And again, you can go back to the most important games we played, the one against the Eagles in the playoff last year. We scored one touchdown with, what, less than a minute to go or whatever it was. This guy, for some reason, when he gets into the red zone, that's really the basically the area where you really go to the end zone and you try to get that 6 points. You try to make that touchdown. He doesn't do it. And he was questioned about it, and he really got testy with some of the reporters. And I'll tell you what, that's not how you answer a reporter in the city of Chicago. This is a great sports town. You're a head coach. Act like it. Have some respect. You know, what you're doing out there, what you're the guy calling the plays. You're the guy designing the offense from week to week. It's you, Nagy, not anybody else. It sure hell isn't me. It's not Rokan. It's not Anna. It's you.
It is Kevin.
Answer the question.
Could be Kevin.
Who's out there? You. And answer them in the proper way that it should be.
All right, I want to ask you a question with all your football wisdom. Last night, yesterday afternoon, one of the most horrifying moments of this entire deal was when the Bears, right before they sent out Pinheiro, as they had one timeout left, they could have run a play. They could, and instead, what they did is they basically just took a knee where they were to leave it at a 41-yard?
Yeah, 41-yard.
Yeah, 41-yard field goal, as opposed to taking David Montgomery, who's having a great day, and he drags a line for a little guy. I mean, he reminds me so much of Walter Payton in a lot of ways in terms of that part of his game, is that he, you know, after first contact, the guy just runs through people. Why not give it to him? Why not let them get a couple extra yards? Because what I was thinking, even if they only got a yard, it doesn't make Pinheiro, I think by taking the knee, that put more pressure on this rookie kicker.
Bro, listen. What does that tell you? What you can read from that, you can read several things. But what some of the true reads are to me, he does not trust the quarterback. Number one, he can say how much he loves him. I've got his back. He's got my back. Everybody's got everybody's back over there. He does not trust him, or he does not trust the offensive line. And passing game, obviously he doesn't trust the receivers, and he doesn't trust the quarterback in throwing the football. That's exactly why he went for it right then and there. My God, if you give Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes. You got 43 seconds and a timeout to go. They probably scored 2 or 3 touchdowns. I mean, it's laughable what this guy's doing. And then again, not to jump what I started out, when the people questioned him, the reporters did, he got very smart-alecky answers and what have you. And I'm going to tell you what. We're going up to Philadelphia to play. What do we got? What, like 9 more games or so? I'm going to tell you what. We got to play at Green Bay. We got to play at Detroit. We got to play at Minnesota. We got to play at the Los Angeles Rams. And we got Kansas City coming in here to play the Bears. This thing, if this guy doesn't start playing big-time football and throwing the ball down the field and make things happen, I don't know what else to tell you, Ro and Anna and Kevin. My God, what is this guy doing? You get down in the red zone where you can score touchdowns, score points. He plays for a field goal. I mean, how dumb is dumb?
You know, it was, OB, I'm with you. That was one of the worst coach games I've ever seen in my life. It was an embarrassment. You're talking about the red zone, OB. Let's not forget how the first half ended. He burned a timeout way too early. And then this is the sequence. Mitch Trubisky incomplete. David Montgomery, a run for no gain. Then they were forced to spike the football on third down with 1 second left. From the 1 yard line, OB. I've never seen that in my life. That's embarrassing. That's horrible time management. That's horrible play calling by Matt Nagy. That's Mitch Trubisky.
You read it right. You saw it right. And you explained it correctly. But, Kevin, let's go back to the prior games already this year. Let's go back to last year when Nagy had Trubisky from game to game to game. If we didn't have that defense and we didn't get all the bounces of the ball and all the breaks, all the calls, we wouldn't have won 12 games. Our offense won 1 game last year, and that was against Tampa Bay. The defense stepped up, scored 6 touchdowns, and they made it happen for us. This year, what is it on? It's on Nagy's head. He's got to start coaching, and he's just got to stop this. I'm running out of words to say about this guy. I mean, how dumb is dumb? What the hell is this guy? I don't even know what he's doing.
Yeah, to give you an idea of how big of a mess this whole thing is, we're talking to Mitch Trubisky in the interview room after the game, and he finishes up his time with us, and as he's walking out, the players go out a specific door back to the locker room. The door was locked, and Mitch Trubisky was stuck in the interview room.
Oh,
I felt so,
poor guy.
It was cringeworthy. The media relations people are running around because we're all watching this unfold. The starting quarterback is locked in the interview room. It was cringeworthy, and I think it just sort of take whatever you want from that, but I thought it was perfectly painful to see this thing, which is a complete mess right now.
I want to jump on something here, too, before we, because I couldn't believe how many points the Bears gave up on their own offense yesterday. We're talking about all the stuff in the red zone.
Unreal.
But there were a number of overthrows of guys wide open who had beaten their secondary completely who would have scored touchdowns. I saw two right off the top that I can think of, Gabriel and Miller. It is just unbelievable to me. He cannot make a pass over 10 yards.
Well, here's what's going to come down the road. Okay, if things start to go south in Philadelphia, just happened what happened there in Philadelphia, and the teams that we have to play and where we have to play them, I'm going to tell you something. All hell is going to break loose with the Chicago Bears. Mark my words, what I'm telling you, all hell is going to break loose. This coach is going to be he's a little testy. Obviously, he can't take criticism or even attempt to try to explain a valid question by a reporter, and he gets testy and smart alecky with them. If he keeps that up, this guy's going to put his own self out of this town. I really don't care, because I tell you what, if he's a head coach, I'm an astronaut. I couldn't even pass a physical to be an astronaut.
He said he'd make the same plays over and over 1,000 times over, and that he would give zero thought to putting Eddie Pinheiro in a better shot to make that kick. So those are the things that kind of infuriated fans afterwards, because that's not exactly what you wanted to hear. But there are all kinds of, when you say all hell breaks loose, do you mean there could be a trade with Trubisky? Do you mean that Matt Nagy loses his job? What do you mean by all hell breaks loose?
All of the above. All of the above. I'm going to tell you something. You think George McCaskey and you think the rest of the players on that team, you think when they see Mitch Trubisky try to throw a football and he throws it 7 feet over a receiver's head or 10 yards past them, you think they don't see that? When they're out there, especially the guys on defense, fighting to stop, trying to take the ball away to get points to score to win a game. Anna, they see that. Now, they may not tell you that, oh, yeah, we love him, we've got his back. I don't think so. And I'll tell you what, if this continues of Nagy trying to keep this kid in a closet somewhere, and again, what he showed or what he told his people, and it's actually how it looked to the fans, that he didn't trust his offense, which means he didn't trust his line to block if they were going to run it, didn't trust his line if they were going to pass it, and didn't trust Trubisky throwing the football. That's exactly what happened.
There just does seem to be a lack of confidence all around, especially on the offensive side of things with the play call. The play calling yesterday, OB, I just was watching, and I could not believe what I was. It was unreal. I mean, they would gain a bunch of yardage on the ground, and the next thing you know, it's a 5-wide set, and he's throwing it 5 times in a row.
Well, I'll tell you, like I said, this could be because we got several home games yet to go and places to go, and a lot of people were really thinking and talking about, you know, Super Bowl, winning the division, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there were a lot of wonderful things that happened last year. We got a lot of breaks that normally you don't get, but it worked out. We won the 12 games. We got in the playoffs at home. We lost it. Start out this year, all you have to do is see what this guy did in the offseason. I'm talking about Nagy. Not what are you doing? What are you getting these kids ready to do? You get to training camp. What are you doing? You get to the exhibition season. What are you doing? He did the same thing from nothing to nothing to nothing, and then he opens the season, and he gets slapped in the face. What the hell did he think was going to happen?
Oh, God.
No.
No, this sucks. Kevin was just saying this, and I have to agree with his lamentation here, that this is the 100th anniversary. It opened with that game against Green Bay. And I said this at the time. If they were going to go 11-5 if they won that game. If they didn't, they were going to go 8-8. Now I think 8-8 is a ridiculous number for them to actually be able to hit, because I don't see how there are 5 games left that they could possibly
Looking
win
at that
the
schedule.
Way they're playing. And this isn't, you know, they are in the NFL, and they're not going to get anything for Mitchell Trubisky. What are you going to trade him for, right? Who's going to give you anything? You'd be lucky to get a 4th-round pick.
ESPN's Adam Schefter's got a trade rumor out there that's floating. I don't know if you've seen this, Kev, that they would trade Gabriel for the 49er quarterback. What's his name? CJ something? CJ.
Oh, that's not the answer. There's a reason he's a backup quarterback to Jimmy Garoppolo.
But you wonder if there are conversations happening.
Yeah.
And that's what's got to be sort of taking shape, if not now, then imminently.
I wouldn't be completely surprised if they do make some sort of... I mean, the trade deadline's tomorrow. I think with what we've seen from Ryan Pace and how aggressive he's been getting Khalil Mack, they realize they have a window here. Mm-hmm. And the window can shut very quickly in the NFL. So you've got a championship-type defense, you've got a mess at quarterback, and you got a head coach who doesn't know how to make the proper play calls. It's a disaster. I don't know what the answers are. Because if you look at the roster, it does feel like they have all the personnel you can need, maybe outside the quarterback position. But other than that, there's really no glaring holes on the roster.
Even on the offense. On the offense, there are no glaring holes. They actually, I mean, the line needs a little work, right? There's no question about that. But, and that's where it all begins.
Well, hold it, guys. Let me tell you something. I think we have finally had some quality receivers. And what I think, what you're missing, what Nagy is missing, he is not playing to the quarterback's strengths. He is not a pocket passer. We just, what happened? We run the ball. What comes into play is play action. We had one play action pass, and it worked. Okay? Move the pocket. Get Trubisky out of there. Here, Kevin, do you ever see us roll out, sprint out, bootleg out, naked bootleg? Do you ever see us do that?
I couldn't agree more, OB. I was just
play action pass.
Get him on the move.
You run the ball. You run the ball. That's one of the greatest weapons is a play action. Like, try to get it in the running back's belly, pull it out, try to hit the tight end in the seam, crossing ends coming over, or a fly pattern. But we don't do any of that. Of the things that are available for Trubisky to do to make him a better, viable quarterback, Nagy does not do. He does not move the pocket. He does not roll him out. He does not bootleg. And he does not run play action. If you don't believe me, get the films and look at it.
Okay, OB. Thank you.
It's so true.
Thank you.
We have listeners mad that even that Matt Nagy is wearing a visor. They say, ditch the visor. That's for tennis. And we also have another listener who says upset about the whole dance routine in the end zone for the touchdown. I mean, did you have time to choreograph that?
Yeah. I mean, let's try to get in the end zone a little more
before you dance.
What they ought to stick on his head is a bucket.
Thank you. Thank you, OB. Talk to you next week.
Guys. Thank you.
Oh. I love OB.
Like, they're worried that he's going to get hurt. Right?
Trubisky?
Yeah. They're worried he's going to get hurt. I mean, it's they would do better off with the backup. They got to make a move here. I love the idea of a move. You know, they should give Trubisky and Gabriel to San Francisco.
Gabriel's been ineffective, too. It's weird.
Well, because Trubisky's ineffective. Trubisky cannot get the ball.
Montgomery wasn't ineffective.
No, and they ran him, and he got over 100 yards.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't want to talk about it.
There's nothing really there.
I'm not talking about it. What part of I'm not talking about it don't you understand?
I totally understand.
Lauren, talk to me about the traffic, would you?
Not to mention all the penalty yards we were given, but still, you know, we didn't take it.
Oh, God, why did you even bring that up? Oh, God!
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go!
Three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
If we must.
Number five.
Well, the president was in town today, and he certainly had in his sights the Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson, who had made a fairly public statement at the end of last week about how he was not going to be attending the president's speech today in front of the International Association of Chiefs of Police at McCormick Place. The president said he doesn't think that Eddie Johnson has the right values. But then Johnson said that Trump's values don't line up with Chicago's values. So it's just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. But the president did, while he was here, because, you know, this is his, he's got a couple Chicago stories. He likes to talk about the Chicago crime. But he also has a story about how he met a guy. Met a guy 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago when he was here. It was a policeman, part of a motorcycle unit. He, as he now describes it, who told him if the police wanted to fix this, they could fix it in a day.
I said, you're a tough guy. How long do you think it would take you to fix this killing problem in Chicago? He looked at me and said, one day, sir. These cops are great. They know all the bad guys, sir. They know exactly what to do. We could straighten it out so quickly that your head would spin. I left very impressed, whether it was one day, 1 week, or 1 month. There was no doubt he could have done it.
Right.
What are they referring to there?
One guy in a chance meeting at a cocktail party. See, that wasn't really a cocktail party, but you know what I mean? It's sort of like you meet somebody at a cocktail party, you're going to make them your Secretary of State? Well, maybe. I mean, that isn't how that goes. And a guy says he could do it in a day.
There is no one-day fix to
what
this
is that?
Problem. Let's be honest.
Or a month. What's the month?
No.
You round up everybody. You just arrest everybody. I mean, it's how do you know who you're grabbing up and you're not grabbing up? I get it. Listen, it's a tough situation. I'm not trying to make it seem as though the police don't have a lot of good ideas. There are a lot of street cops who have ideas about what they got to do because they deal with those same streets day in and day out. But that's ridiculous.
It is. Everybody's been trying to figure out who this cop is since he first mentioned it in 2016 when he was running for office, and no one's been able to do that.
So here is Superintendent Johnson's reaction to the mystery cop.
That's just not going to happen. I mean, look, we're all adults here.
that if there were that person, they would solve the crime in this country, not just in Chicago. So that person doesn't exist. Nobody. Nobody. Out of the, back then it was 12,000 of us. Nobody was, would take claim that they said that to him.
Hmm.
I, now, is he accusing the president of making something up?
Yeah, he is. And, you know, by the way, he made his made a statement today. It's interesting because Superintendent Johnson not being there, I think it became personal for the president. Then suddenly he was the one who directed all his comments about up there. He's embarrassing. The reason he doesn't want to show up because of his homicide rate and went on and on and on. And then afterwards, Eddie Johnson gave a news conference saying, today you're being protected, Mr. President, by the officers that you criticize. I think it was more personal, though, Eddie and Donald kind of thing.
Yes. Well, but, you know, they always like to say about Donald Trump, he says about himself and his support staff always says about him, well, he's a counterpuncher. And all he counterpunched to was a guy not showing up, right? I mean, there's no any level of humiliation is going to get met with, or attempted humiliation is going to be met with 10x force, right? That's what he likes to do. Now, the president did, while he was here, did bring up famed French actor Jussie Smollett.
Then you have the case of this wise guy, Jesse Smollett, who beat up himself. And he said MAGA country did it. MAGA country. Okay? He said MAGA. It's a hate crime. And it's a scam. It's a real big scam. Just like the impeachment of your president is a scam. And then you look what's going on. Smollett is still trying to get away with it. He would have been better off if he paid his $100,000 bill.
I agree with the president on that.
I think a lot of Chicagoans do on that one.
Sort of. Well,
and the fact that he, you know, maybe could settle this differently. It could have turned out better in the end had he done certain things.
All right, moving along to
number four.
Oh man, this story gets weirder and weirder. This is this Congresswoman Katie Hill.
Bizarre story.
From California.
Mm-hmm. All the pictures that came out.
Democrat stepped down yesterday amid ethics probe into allegations that she had an affair with an office aide. Relationships between members of Congress and their staff are banned. And now we've got the Me Too movement on top of it. She denies a relationship with the office aide, but she does admit to having a relationship with a campaign aide. Graphic pictures of Hill and the campaign aide were published online.
I made this decision so that my supporters, my family, my staff, and our community will no longer be subjected to the pain inflicted by my abusive husband and the brutality of hateful political operatives. This coordinated campaign carried out by the right-wing media and Republican opponents, enabling and perpetuating my husband's abuse by providing him a platform, is disgusting and unforgivable, and they will be held accountable.
Now, there was something going on here, too.
She had the female staffer, the younger female staffer, who had willingly had a relationship with her. And some of the pictures that leaked showed her brushing the staffer's hair, and I think she was naked. And
then the husband had taken the pictures, right?
They were a throuple.
Throuple.
She, her husband, and the staffer. Throuple.
Okay.
That's what was going on there.
Okay. That's just one extra person to get mad at you. Is the way that's the problem with the throuple.
It's complicated enough for one on one stuff.
Right, exactly.
That maybe.
They had one more person than that mix, and there's just one more person that's gonna just get mad. All right, we'll get to your three, your two, and your one, but first let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening on the roadways? All right, here we go. Top 5-5 continues. We've worked our way to
number three.
David Ross spoke to reporters for the first time as the Cubs' new field manager. And he says he's not going to let his personal relationships that he's already forged with these players get in the way of his managerial style.
I think there's a little bit of a misconception of maybe the fun-loving Grandpa Rossi, which I love and I'm very thankful for. But I don't think that's me in the dugout as much as I would love to say that I'm that guy. I just, to the core, I'm a guy that has a lot of expectations when I come into work.
I just ask you this
question.
Sounds
all managerial all of a sudden.
Yeah, sure.
I think he does.
If you had your own team, your own baseball team,
mm-hmm.
would you rather have as your manager? Would you rather have Joe Maddon or David Ross?
Well, Joe Maddon, what? I mean, come on. You can't even bring that up because he just won a World Series for a town that hasn't had one in a long time.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying.
I'm just saying.
Don't get me started. It's bad enough. Thank you.
Number two.
David Ross can really dance, too. Something else we learned about him.
That sums up what number two is. Fading to black quickly.
Yeah.
So the Bears.
Bears. That's where we're going.
They lost to the L.A. Chargers, or as what's-his-face kept calling them yesterday, the San Diego Chargers. The guy used to be the Cubs announcer. What's his name?
Oh,
yeah.
I saw a bunch of Cincinnati. San Diego people Brenneman. There who are still fans of the Chargers.
Tom Brenneman. Yep. Matt Nagy was asked in a press conference afterwards, is there any improvement with the quarterback?
Yeah, again, there's this thing right here with Mitch is he's at a point right now where yesterday, matter of fact, I got it on my index cards right here. There's a bunch of yellow on here, okay? There's a lot of really good throws in yellow that he made, okay? There's others within the game that he can get better at. There's one that he truly missed, and that's the one you all are talking about, the one to Taylor Gabriel. He truly missed that one.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I think he missed a few.
Oh, no. That's not true. How about the interception that he threw? Underthrows a guy by two body lengths? Is that okay? That's okay?
The fumble that turned into a touchdown?
How about that? What about that?
Relying on your field goal kicker instead of
the one that doinked
the ball
earlier in the game?
So then, he was asked this.
Time is of the essence here. I mean, 3-4 right now.
For sure.
You know what the Packers have done, the Vikings are done. Is there still time left in the season to get him playing the way that you need him to play?
Yes, there is. And we understand that this is as a unit right now, we didn't get to win, but we felt like there was definitely an improvement. So we're gonna make sure that we just keep our nose to the grind. We stay positive. We stay really positive because that's who we are. And the only thing we can focus on at 3-4 right now is Philadelphia.
I think they lost losing. I'm not sure where it is on the losing scale of the fans. I was in the stadium yesterday. They were booing and booing and booing. Oh, my gosh.
This is at a moment like this. I need OB.
I am so aggravated that a team could come in like this and take a victory away from us because of a stupid, gutless coach.
Are you referring mostly to
Nagy?
Right.
Did I say it loud enough?
You did, OB. Well, the best story from today was Montgomery going 27.
Who cares? Hey, they used him one drive. After that, you know what? If you got a quarterback like Trubisky, then you feature the run.
I always feel like Carm sits there as like a tackling dummy. Right, he's just there to be thrown around, to get mad.
Sense he's ducking at some points. Yeah. You know, like he's just sort of getting out of the way. They were mad at the fact that Trubisky had a hand warmer yesterday. Did you guys hear that? He had a hand warmer and it was 55 degrees.
It was a beautiful day. Let's be honest.
Yeah, you're not going to get
a little weak in their eyes.
You're not going to get a better late October day in Chicago than
that. Perfect.
Right. I mean, this is November 1st is your cutoff. That's always where even the season ticket holders, like the rich people have the best seats. This is where the best deals are to be had. You know me. I'm like Mr. figuring out the prices of these seats. After November 1st, you know, they're done. They don't want to send their clients to the games or any of that sort of stuff. So they put their tickets on the market. And who's going to pay anything for anything? Because they're not going to be back here for a couple of weeks, right? And then when they come back here, the weather's really going to be bad. And then they're going to be 3-6 at that point. And there's going to be no reason for anybody to go who does not want to have an aneurysm. All I was thinking about when I'm watching this at the end, I'm like, I just want paramedics standing by. You know, like an ambulance is always on the side of the field, right?
Mm-hmm.
In a football game or any kind of athletic,
that?
Right? I want an ambulance in the hallway here at WGN for OB in case something bad happens.
Yesterday's show, I took a lot to get through. I mean, they were so good. They really were after the game.
Well, they make you feel better.
They just do. They do.
They represent how we truly
mm-hmm.
feel.
They're passionate. They love these Bears. They want them to be good. And then they point out everything that didn't go well. Oh.
And how much didn't go well? All of it. Yeah. And for Nagy to sit there, I'm sorry, for him to stand there, technically, and say, well, there was really just that one pass that he overthrew. He's assuming that we're stupid, that we don't understand. Well, you know, in football terms, I mean, that's, you know, yeah, you can underthrow a guy. That's not really a missed pass. That's on the receiver. No, it's not. The receiver was where he was supposed to be. He knew where the receiver was. You have to throw it over the defender. That's the whole point of the defender. I can't even start with this anymore.
Nagy.
Okay. I got to do an obit here, so I got to get myself together. Here we go.
Pull it together.
Number one.
Movie producer Robert Evans, who is behind such classic films as Chinatown, Marathon Man, and Urban Cowboy, has died. Even though Hollywood history is filled with colorful characters, few can match the stories of Robert Evans, which he told in not only a book, but also a movie about his life. It's called The Kid Stays in the Picture. And the title comes from an incident early in his career when he was playing a bullfighter in the 1957 adaptation of the Hemingway classic, The Sun Also Rises.
I wasn't getting the parts I wanted. I realized that I had to own something that nobody else could get. I met a guy named George Weezer. He worked for Publishers Weekly. He moonlighted for me for about $150 a week. Comes to me and says, I just finished a book, Bob. It's called The Detective. This is one hot book. I read it, put $5,000 down on it as an option, and go in to see David Brown, who's a pal of mine from 20th Century Fox, who's a top producer there. He says, David, I think I have the next big book.
And it worked out for Robert Evans. It he did. Married Linda Evans, by the way, if you're just wondering about that.
Dynasty fame.
Mm-hmm.
Right here.
And this is an interview he did with an Italian newspaper about one of his other projects, a little movie called The Godfather.
No one wanted to make it, and for a reason. There had never been one successful mafia film ever made. I'm going to give you a picture you're going to smell of spaghetti. It's an Italian-Sicilian film as an opera. That's the only reason they made the film.
Robert Evans was 89.
The top five at five.
All right, that's us.
Time for us.
Yes, that's correct. Mm-hmm. All right, so over the weekend, the big story, obviously, was the killing of Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi, who mm-hmm. was the head of ISIS. And congratulations to everybody involved in that. The president came out, made the big announcement yesterday morning after tweeting on Saturday night. Something big just happened. Couldn't wait to get out there and tell everybody about it. And you know, listen, this is one of those moments where presidents, you know, you remember, of course, how Barack Obama handled the killing, the capture and killing of
Osama bin Laden.
Right. And now you have a moment like this. It's a little bit different in terms of tone and tenor. There were three times the president mentioned his book in his announcement yesterday morning, which I thought was weird. But it's a moment. He gets the same amount of credit that Barack Obama gets, right? Which is that they were the ones who made the final call, and that was they made the movement, and history will regard them as the commander in chief at the time that it occurred. So that's all fair. But the question is, what does this mean moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
Like when bin Laden was killed, was he still operationally in charge of al-Qaeda? What was al-Qaeda at that point? And now, what is ISIS? Was ISIS destroyed? Is ISIS still viable? Does ISIS have any kind of leadership? Where does it all go from here? If you want to know the answers, there's only one human being you can ask. So we're asking him for you. Bob Baer, formerly of the CIA, one of the most decorated officers ever in the clandestine service for that agency.
Right.
Bob, let's talk about this. This is obviously a big get. They've been trying to get this guy for a decade, right?
Yeah, no, it's a big get. And it's not only that, Delta Force flying into a hostile area. I'm talking about this is a really bad place, coming in with a dozen helicopters and walking into the unknown. It's like a wild western bar and shooting it out. So, I mean, we have to first of all acknowledge the bravery and the talent of the military. I mean, they've had a lot of experience, and these guys have really given up their lives for this, and it's a super job. There's no other way to describe it. And then you get to the politics of it, which is the crazy stuff. And that's when it gets crazy. One is referring to these people as dogs. You have to remember that the Islamic State grew out of the humiliation of the Iraqi army, which was completely, you know, taken down in 2003 and was a horrible humiliation for Sunni Muslims in Iraq. It got worse when we turned the country over to a pro-Iranian leadership, not that we did that intentionally. So you're looking at a very humiliated community, and anybody who's humiliated anywhere in the world tends to strike back. That doesn't justify anything that Abu Bakr Baghdadi did. I mean, he headed a death cult, which needs to be wiped out. And he's done more damage to Muslims than anybody. So if you got it, you have to get the nuances of this. But the real problem is that we got Baghdadi because of our alliances in the Middle East, especially with the Kurds and the Iraqi government and the Turks sometimes. So insulting our allies or cutting them loose or betraying them is going to make us less safe because we can't do this without them. And that's really, at the end of the day, our problem is betraying the Kurds. And, you know, we don't know that they're going to hit in the United States, but you know, I just got a text from Homeland Security had watched me on TV saying, hey, you know, well, they're going to try to come get us anyhow. We don't think it's going to make any difference, the president's words. And my fear is the random guy out there who decides to get in the truck and run it into a crowd decided he's going to right a great injustice. And that's, it's not a network here necessarily, but the self-recruited guy on the internet.
Right. The question about the Russians keeps coming up here. The president thanked the Russians yesterday in his speech, and they apparently did give us some operational envelope in which to operate yesterday in this part of northwestern Iraq, northwestern Syria, where we don't really have a foothold. Do you know exactly what it was that the Russians helped us with?
It was deconflicting, because the Russian Air Force is flying over that area all the time. And the last thing we wanted to do was surprise them and, you know, and get into some sort of fight. So we deconflicted with them and no doubt Turkey. But you know what surprises me is that why didn't we launch this raid from Turkey? It's a NATO ally. We have a giant base there. It's essentially a five-minute Uber ride from the Turkish border to this compound that we hit. Why take the risk of flying 12 helicopters an hour across Syria when you could have done it so quickly and with more surprise and more troops and the rest of it? So that makes me worry about where's Turkey in all this, that didn't happen.
Well, would the concern there be that Turkey would tip them?
Well, the problem is Baghdadi was living in a Turkish-controlled area along the border. The Turks are across there all the time, their intelligence and their military. So he was essentially living in their backyard. How much did they know? I don't know. You know, you have a lot of people accuse the Turks of supporting the Islamic State, but that's at the level of conspiracy theory. So I won't comment on that. But I do wonder why he was so close to the Turkish border.
Yeah.
And it worries me.
Bob, there have been reports in the past that Baghdadi was amongst those killed in different operations, and it was never quite confirmed because we didn't really know. In this case, the president said that there was this DNA testing that was done on site to prove his identity. CNN's reporting that they actually obtained his underwear and tested them and were able to confirm with some degree of certainty, or absolute certainty, I want to hear from you what you think, that this is indeed him.
I think the military would never go on any sort of record unless they knew it was him, and by DNA, mm-hmm. Not just his, you know, people recognizing him. These guys, I've worked with them for years, they don't go on chance, they don't go on, you know, fragmentary intelligence, never. They knew the guy was there. Mm-hmm. They had air coverage of him, if not beacons. I have no idea. Cameras, something. In the military, it's called eyes on your target. You just simply don't move without that. I mean, this is a well-oiled machine. they've been taken for a ride in Iran in 1980, and they're never going to do that again. And by the way, as I said, they're really good at this. And also, what we also have to understand is if the president is right that they breached a wall to get into the compound rather than going through the front door, you have to put a lot of explosives on a wall. You don't quite know how thick it is, so you put a lot. And then you're left with rebar. I saw the rebar in the pictures, mm-hmm. and that's the stuff hard to cut through if you've ever done a breaching. So you have to use a lot of explosives. So when they go in, this is called a combat entry. Pretty much a lot of people are expected to die, including Baghdadi. So I think the real intention was to keep our troops safe, go in with an overwhelming force, and see what you can get out of that, and stay on the ground. Well, they stayed, I think, 2 hours. But so this is by the book, and it worked. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, bravo to the president for green lighting this.
It is interesting that they went in, as you put, with such a heavy package, 12 helicopters, as you mentioned, close to 100 different special operators that were involved in this. We're assuming that obviously you got Delta Force, which is combined forces, right? And there had to be CIA in this, I'm assuming, as well. As they're coming in, it is said that they were taking fire from the ground toward the helicopters as they were coming in, obviously on a very low approach, and with the assistance again of the two controlling air controlling governments of that region, which are Turkey and the Soviet and Russia, obviously. So, do we know anything about who was shooting at them? Who would that have been in that region?
That's Al Qaeda controls that area. Jabhat al-Nusra, as it's called. It's Al Qaeda. And of course, they would shoot at any helicopters coming in. I didn't care what they were.
Because they don't have helicopters, so they know they're not shooting at themselves, right?
Yeah, they know they're not shooting at themselves. They know they're not friendly, so they would shoot at them. And these helicopters, and I don't know this, but I've seen it done, reply with Gatling guns. It's amazing when these things, you take shovels, and that's how they feed the Gatling, the snow shovels. So a guy stands there and just feeds a big hopper with bullets, and it's, these things are devastating on a raid like this. And then you also have, you know, missiles fired by drones and the rest of it. So they came in heavy, probably a lot of Rangers in case there were a problem. There are probably all sorts of people standing by offshore in the Mediterranean to go in if they got in trouble, mm-hmm. And all sorts of air cover. So yeah. You basically go to the Russians and you say, hey, we can do this the easy way or the hard way. And the hard way is, you know, if you put your planes up, we'll shoot them down.
It's interesting.
And that's pretty well.
You mentioned that. It's interesting they didn't come in from the Med in the first place because it's much closer than how they actually came across northern Syria.
Well, you know, on these raids, there's so much disinformation that's put out after them. We don't know that some of these helicopters didn't come off the Mediterranean. We don't know that, in fact, that some didn't come out of Turkey. And it, to keep everybody's, you know, reputation, they said, listen, don't say we had anything to do with it. I mean, the Russians at first denied it.
Yeah.
The Ministry of Defense, that there was any deconfliction. And the easiest people to blame for launching the thing is the Iraqi government, who doesn't particularly like the Islamic State in the first place.
Right.
So I always wait, you know, sometimes for years before the real details come out. Like Abbottabad, we still don't have the details on that.
Yeah.
I mean, those helicopters were refueled at some point. They either did it on the ground in the tribal areas of Pakistan, just controlled by the Pakistani government, or they did it in the air. And that kind of refueling operation, you would pick that up with radar by the Pakistanis.
Yeah,
so why
they have to get high enough to do that? They had to get above the terrain.
Yeah, and how would that? Why didn't, you know? I could be wrong, but why didn't the Pakistanis respond? And why didn't they respond on the ground when you're down 40 minutes after a gunfight in a crashed helicopter? Why didn't the police show up?
Yeah, well, because they were hiding Bin Laden. That's why. Separate issue.
Yeah. So of course, the prime minister has come out of Pakistan. The current one said, hey, somebody in our government was hiding him.
Yeah.
He said that.
He was right next to West Point. I mean, their version of West Point, but that's where he was. All right, very quickly, is ISIS still a formidable fighting force in that region?
I think so. As long as there's chaos in Iraq and Syria, people will turn to the local bully. for protection, for to take revenge. It will turn into something else with a different name. But the ideology, the cult of death ideology, won't be changed much. It will still be very violent. Whether it strikes the West or not, who knows? This violence against the West is a contagion, and it sort of wells up and then goes away. But it's unpredictable where it goes from here.
Bob Baer, thank you very much. Appreciate it, sir.
Thanks.
All right, there he goes. Let's talk to Lauren Lapko. What's happening in the roadways right now? We got the news from Northwestern Medicine Newsroom coming your way in just a few minutes. Don't forget about that. And in the 6 o'clock hour, there's an update right now coming in from the Chicago Public Schools about the contract negotiations, where they stand. Again, the...
Anything positive?
School day has been canceled for tomorrow.
For tomorrow.
So that's not positive.
No.
But the... obviously, the CPS negotiators are like, well, we're working on this. We got, things going. I know this seems like such a minor thing, but I think about this. So... Simeon being able to play in the state playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Tomorrow was one of the 2 days that could have thrown them out of the playoffs, because if they had to play on Friday in the state playoffs, they would not be eligible if they couldn't practice tomorrow. Do you know if they're scheduled for Friday or Saturday?
They're playing Saturday.
All right. So
they're still alive as long as it's done. If they can practice Wednesday, their season is alive.
Yeah. And I know that's it. I don't know why I'm stuck on that particular issue with all the other things that are going on here, but I just feel for those kids, and I know what those programs mean to those kids, especially a school like Simeon.
Yeah, and 56 public league volleyball teams today had to forfeit their regional playoffs that began tonight.
Oh.
Over 800 student athletes impacted today. So the volleyball teams will forfeit their playoff game
and
matches.
Each day that goes by, you can imagine there are more and more deadlines, right?
Yeah, cross country has been affected. Some runners missed up regional tournaments over the weekend. I think tennis, even golf as well. So
we also have the University of Chicago.
Oh, my God, not golf!
Really, now it's hitting close to home. Rose, very interested. Very interested. Well, the University of Chicago today said they're going to extend the early applications deadline for you to get into college there if you're a CPS student. Because remember, there's that issue as well that... If you're trying to get into college early, you're trying to get your counselors to write recommendations, your teachers to write recommendations. They're not around to do that right now, and so those students also are really feeling it. And I know that some alums at some of those schools have gone in to try to help with that process, but they're trying to compete with everybody across the entire United States for those college positions, and that's tough for them too. Another consequence.
Yeah, and this is the worst time of year for this. Obviously, for all of these things to happen, it's the end of the football season, the beginning of the basketball season. You've got all the college applications are due. You got early admission, early decision, whatever starts like in November, right? And you kind of work your way through.
All your testing coming up for ACTs and SATs and MAP testing. I mean, it's just there's a continuity issue in the classroom, right? You just started to get in a rhythm, and then you're out of class. To say nothing of the parents and everybody else who's trying to figure this out day by day.
It's bad.
It is. It is.
And as much as we were talking earlier today about this and said, well, if the parents start to get upset, the teachers union might cave. I don't think so. And not only the teachers unions listen to anybody but their leadership. I don't think even the teachers themselves, the teachers are frustrated themselves, right?
Sure.
Because they want to get back. They know what they know what they want. I think they, like in any negotiation, you know what you want. You also know what you're willing to take, and that's individually determined. So who knows where everybody's going to be. But in the meantime, it's an ugly situation for everybody, and I really feel badly for the kids because they're the ones who are bearing the brunt of it. Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where Kim Gordon is. She's got the news in two. 3 days left.
Until Halloween.
Until Michael Myers comes back down the street. Dang, I wounded.
Did you see the list of Illinois top costumes has been released?
Illinois specifically.
Is this kids, adults, or everybody?
Well, the funny thing is...
Is sexy, what's it called, the Popeye's chicken on there?
It is not. No. And White Claw is not up on this list either, not in the top 15. But what's interesting about White Claw is the White Claw costume, where you dress as a can of White Claw.
What flavor?
I think you could be all of them.
Is there a is there a dominant flavor in White Claw, like the lemon lime or something like that?
I think there's I like the lime one. There's like a mango, a raspberry.
I feel like the black cherry or
black
raspberry.
Cherry, I think that's a popular
most
one.
Most popular that I've noticed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I like a lime. You can make a cocktail out
of it. Did you see? Oh, my God. Before we get to this, did you see the commercial during the Bears game? You didn't see it, Kev, because you were working. For Natural Light, Natty Light is doing its own seltzer water.
Yeah, but did you see that they're also changing the name for the World Series right now?
To the Natty Light
World Series?
Yeah, they like changed part of their title for it. So they have like specialized cans. Hold on, let me get the exact name.
Oh, you mean for Natty Light, not for the World Series? Because that seems
for the World Series, and it's their fancy whatever you just said.
The seltzer, they call it the Catalina Lime Mixer. They got Aloha Beaches.
Right.
Oh, they're like fancy names.
Well, the beaches, the commercial is actually very funny because it's the guy refers to beaches. Are you ready for this, beaches? You know, sort of. It's well done, but that's the thing. Natty Light, you didn't go and buy Natural Light as a youngster for the taste. You bought it because it was $1.29 a six. That's why you bought it. So, where are they going with this? Because Natty Light, obviously, a college and young, you know, just postgraduate, 21 to 25 year olds, as they like
to
say.
Totally. Yeah. I think millennials and kids and still in college.
Yeah, well, you look at White Claw, and then now the Truly is everywhere.
Yeah, they're just trying to keep up.
They're just trying to keep up. They've got it's such a hot drink. Like, suddenly. Mm-hmm. Who was talking about this a year and a half ago?
So, their cans, they have some cans being sold near Washington that have fake tape over it that says Nationals Light Seltzer. So,
I see what they're doing there. Yeah, trying to get a little publicity with that. You got to remember, I went to college a number of years ago.
Go Big Red, Denison.
Thank you very much. That was the number one beer there too. Back then, it's basically been the cheap beer of college students forever.
Long time. Well, it's all like location, because around us it was Busch Light, and then there's Keystone. And then you have the Natty Ice, and those are pretty much the main ones.
Like Nasty
Miller
Ice.
Light and Bud Light are high class compared to those.
Right. That's when you knew that if you really wanted to score on a date, you brought over a six of Michelob. Look out! You knew at that point. You're like, hey, how you doing?
Wow, Michelob.
I got a Michelob. See the bottle? Sexy. Looks like a lava lamp.
Gosh, it's not in a keg. It's so wild.
Are you ready? Here, let's go back to this for the top 10. Halloween costumes in the state of Illinois.
Yes, mm-hmm. I think so.
Lauren's a costume expert here.
So going from number 15 up. So Harley Quinn.
Still?
Yep. Ooh. Mouse.
That's a fun costume.
Stranger Things. I don't know that either. What is Harley Quinn?
I have no idea.
Harley Quinn is one of the female villains from Batman. She's got the half one color
Margot
hair.
Margot Robbie.
Half the other.
Yeah. That makes sense.
With the ponytails and the fun colored hair.
Okay. Pirate at number 12.
Classic costume.
Rabbit at number 11.
Rabbit? What?
Probably because you can go a lot of different angles with that. You can make it a sexy costume. You could dress a kid up in just a normal
rabbit. I feel like once it's like sexy, it's bunny, not rabbit.
Ooh.
Or Jessica Rabbit. Now that's a sexy costume.
Well, but the rabbit, no matter what, the rabbit is, even if it's a big dumpy rabbit, it's screaming, hey, let's get it on. That's the thing about the rabbit. The rabbit is basically just
by nature.
It's an invitation. It doesn't matter what it is. The unicorn at number 10. I don't know. What? Really?
Really?
Anything 1980s. A 1980s kind of look.
That's easy, yeah.
Unconstructed blazer, blah, 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 blah. That's at number 9. Chucky for number 8. A Fortnite character for number 7. Clown. Any kind of clown
at
number 6. Descendants. At number 5?
Descendants.
What the heck is that?
That's where, like, a lot of the little kids are the Descendants.
Wait, what
is it? That's the movie. I don't know. They're all, they're really fun, like, with different colors.
Not the George Clooney movie where the woman's in a coma, right? Because that seems like a terrible, terrible, terrible costume.
You wouldn't want to do that. Okay. It's like, they're really, they're fun. You know? And I think it's Disney, isn't it? Disney?
Not even the slightest clue.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's a Disney, like, tween show, but it really kind of skews younger, even, like, girls my daughter's age want to be Descendants.
So these are all for the kids, I suppose. A dinosaur at number four. Hard to be a sexy dinosaur. I'm sorry. I don't care how much you try to work that out, how much you cut away from the costume. It ain't going to work.
But they're awesome.
If there's a sexy Popeye's chicken costume, there's a way to do it.
There's a way to do anything. Actually, you know what? The entire sexy whatever it is costume, sexy Superman, sexy Batman, that all just started with adult women putting on kids' costumes because they're skimpy. Right? I mean, that's really what was going on there. They go, look, oh, I'm sexy Batman. You're like, isn't that like a kid's costume? Don't matter. And after a couple Natty Lights, Natty Light Seltzer, Beaches Baby, it doesn't matter. You're like, whatever, and it goes.
Is this just me, or this Saturday was kind of the adult parties typically right before Thanksgiving?
Yeah,
everything before Halloween, you see a lot of the big parties. But the rain kind of killed it because I was out and I saw, I didn't see many costumes. There was even a costume party at our corner bar and nobody was in a costume, or very few, like probably 10%. Felt like the rain.
Mother Nature did not want the crawls to happen.
Yeah, it kind of works out better. The emergency rooms thanked everybody.
They totally did.
Let's see, Spider-Man at number three, Witch at number two, and It at number one.
Ooh, that's a creepy costume.
Which is to be disambiguated from clown.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, you got two separate things.
Mitch Trubisky, Bears player, didn't make the list.
Scary Mitch Trubisky.
I'd like to do the It clown, It, with a Trubisky jersey on. That makes sense to me. There you go.
I think you got scared enough before Halloween. We all did.
He is all of our nightmares.
So I want to make this totally clear before we got off the White Claw thing. Searches for how to make a White Claw costume were up 1,450% over last year.
How would you do that? That seems pretty.
So you can
very involved.
Easily get. So you get a garbage bag, get duct tape of whatever color, and you wrap the duct tape around the garbage bag over your body, and then you can draw whatever on it. I did that once, not as a White Claw, obviously, but in college when we did costumes.
Tomorrow, we'd like to do a segment with you where we just take phone calls and you help people with their costume crisis.
You sound like you know what you're talking about, Lauren. Yeah. I was really impressed there. That's amazing.
Yeah. I think we found something here.
Can you go as a sexy White Claw? Is that possible with the garbage bag?
Oh, absolutely. Because think about it. If you're duct taping your body like a garbage bag, you're doing skin tight outfit. You could do like the tube top, or if you really want to get creative and try and do a halter, but usually people just do the tube top.
Yeah, I remember girls doing this in college. I'm like, what are you doing? They're just like wrapping duct tape around themselves and they couldn't move. It was like a whole production to get somebody to go to the bathroom. It's like, when all hands on deck, Becca's got to go to the bathroom. Everybody to the bathroom.
Becca's two best friends, report to the bathroom door. Somebody bring scissors.
And more duct tape. And some White Claws from the fridge.
You need those trainer scissors so you can't cut yourself with them. The big...
Because Becca with scissors after a case of White Claws.
Yeah, not a good idea. Not a good idea. I do think the whole idea of a sexy garbage bag just doesn't make it for me. But that's...
You can't see the garbage bag.
It's garbage, like the garbage bag's on their skin, and then they put duct tape around it, and then they like paint it or do different colors and stuff. Yeah, so you don't see the garbage bag.
You don't actually have to tape your body.
Doesn't this then account for skin asphyxiation or whatever that thing is?
Huh? What?
Right, that if you cover your skin, too much of your skin, then your skin can't breathe and you drop dead.
Only
like
you would know
finger.
About this, bro. Bizarre medical conditions that no one's heard of.
I would be worried about that. I'd be warning the kids about Becca. If I were Becca's dad, I'd be having her downstairs. You know, all right, now what are you doing this year again? You going as a White Claw again?
Does that involve a garbage bag and plastic close to the skin?
What's wrong with sexy nurse? What's wrong with that?
It's kind of
boring. Your skin can breathe.
Too expensive.
It's a thing to do. All right. So are you dressing for Halloween, by the way, Lauren?
Here, of course I am.
Oh, God.
What are you going to do?
Do you know? Oh, that's a secret.
Okay.
Okay. K Kev, you dress
no,
up?
No, please, let's not go down this road.
He does not like dressing up. We've made him do it before. It's painful. He just doesn't like it.
Just Lauren. Let Lauren be the star Thursday.
No, okay. Not be the only one. People will kick me out of the building.
You showed up with your face made up like you went through your windshield. Now you're worried about dressing up on Halloween.
Through the building like that. Just
get dressed here.
Here.
Yeah.
Okay, maybe I'll do that.
Problem solved. We only have 800 bathrooms to get ready in this new WGN studio.
That's true. You won't be holding anybody up.
That's right. We're at bladder-free zone here at WGN. It's a whole thing, which is good. Unless you have to cut yourself out of your own costume.
That won't be necessary.
What are you going to dress as?
Oh, wow.
Again, that's a secret. She's
Whoa.
Not telling.
I'd like to let you know there's some HR rules here. I'd like to present you with those. Not going to be a... So she already knows.
What she could I know. Possibly dress as that would be breaking rules?
Oh.
Knowing me, let's put it in context.
That's true. That's true.
Very true.
Okay, we're going to go with that.
Is it a complicated costume, though? Like
no.
You had to make
it like 20 questions.
I didn't have time to really invest like I did last year.
Okay.
What did you do last year?
I made my own version of the Riddler, the Jim Carrey Riddler costume when he wears the white with the green sparkly question marks.
Isn't there some deal? You went to Purdue. Isn't there some deal at Purdue where everybody dresses every weekend?
Breakfast Club. So Breakfast Club is the tradition that every home game, football game, we get dressed up in costumes and go to the bars at like 6 in the morning. You get these giant drinks for like a dollar. It's very dangerous. When
like
you really
Halloween
think
in August, basically,
exactly.
Is what it is.
But it's not necessarily Halloween-type costumes. Usually people get really creative and try to do fun group costumes. So we went as the Powerpuff Girls and the Professor one time. We did
fun.
A group of Care Bears. We did the Power Rangers. We did Minions. So a lot of times it will be based on something that's relevant, based on maybe a recent movie or something going on in the world.
And a group costume.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, but that's usually how it works.
Okay. Well, we wish everybody the best of luck, and we wish Instagram, perhaps Lauren will shut Instagram down on Thursday. We'll see. This is to me, this is the only time that Instagram gets totally interesting.
You think so?
Yeah.
What, because you would like seeing people, everyone in their costumes?
Well,
you think that's fun?
You get to see...
I like seeing people's dogs in their costumes.
A lot of people who don't normally... exhibit themselves, yeah, become very exhibitionist around this time of year.
Yes.
Becomes a big deal.
Saturday was interesting on the Instagram.
Yeah, exactly. But then they went out, everybody came out like a wet dog.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a problem. All right. Stay tuned, people. Thursday ought to be somewhat interesting. Thank you.
Cold, though.
Here is Lauren Lapko with the traffic. What's going on?
For the News at 10, watch WGN, Micah Mater, Joe Dunlin, Dan Rohn, and Chicago's most trusted meteorologist. That's Tom Skilling, of course, for TV News at 10. Watch Chicago's very own WGN.
All right. We learned some things there that I'm not sure I wanted to know.
About Lauren and her costuming?
The whole costume thing, just period. Lauren, Kevin, who, you know, dresses as a sports reporter, right?
He detests costumes.
Right, he dresses as himself and then goes... I'm a radio sports reporter.
Do you have like a lame go-to costume when you go to a costume party and you don't really want to dress up?
Yeah, I normally do like the Bears super fan thing. It's really easy. I just put like I have this vintage like 80s Bears sweatshirt my dad gave me and then just put like a mustache on, a Bears hat, some sunglasses, put a stogie in my mouth.
You're done.
Easy peasy.
Mm-hmm.
It's better than the go-to like Clark Kent of a nice button-up suspenders and fake glasses.
Yeah, I'm not. My favorite costume actually was when I dressed up as Coach Brock Spack of the Illinois State Redbirds. Fear the bird! That was a good one.
I wouldn't know what that looks like, really.
Check my Instagram.
Okay.
Even if she checked your Instagram, that's the point, Kevin. She would not know. She could look. I don't know. Who's that dude?
What is that?
It's Kevin like in a polo. What the hell is that?
It got rave reviews from my friends at Illinois State. It did.
Yeah. All right. Who is that again?
Coach Brock's back. Illinois State Redbirds. Head coach.
Mm-hmm.
Fear the bird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't... you know, they dress me up every year at Windy City Live for something.
Yeah, you always get way out. Yeah. Like,
but see, you get
totally
the treatment. You guys have like a full-blown expert come in there.
Right.
It's like you don't have to do anything.
Right. My favorite was Jack Sparrow.
That explains a lot.
Yeah. I got to just say, I didn't get out of that costume for 2 days. Well, sort of. I mean, I got to say, there's something about Johnny Depp. That thing works.
It does?
Yeah.
Yeah. I could see that.
Yeah. I went to a number of parties after that, and people did not recognize me, and I kind of liked that. That's the whole point of this thing, isn't it? Not to be recognizable. This year, not quite as sexy, but I can't talk about it. You have to just watch on Thursday. All right, right now, we've got the WGN News at the bottom of the hour. Rocancho with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, Anna, you're on.
Celebration of Greek culture, but it's actually more than that. This is a really cool event that I go to every year, and the chefs come out. It's called Kuzina in Greektown, and we have two of the great chefs who are going to be featured as part of this this fun. It's like it's food, it's wine, it's drink. It's an amazing event. Guys, have you participated before?
Yeah, actually...
Let's say your names, too, though. But, Ro, I don't have the beauty of having both of their names with us. And we have Jesus and Keith here, because I just met
Keith McCormick and Jesus Castillo, right?
Right.
Okay. And so, Keith, let's start with you.
All right. I'm Keith McCormick. I'm actually, sadly, I'm not a chef.
And you're not Greek.
I'm not Greek.
That's okay.
But I do work at the National Hellenic Museum. I'm the director of development. So I'm very lucky to be part of...
They couldn't find a Greek guy to be in charge of the money? I find that very hard to believe.
You know, I'm very lucky because I've had an opportunity to work with the community for a number of years now. And, you know, it's really interesting being an Irish-Mexican working with the Greek community. But, you know, it's really a great institution. I had an opportunity to work with them for a few different events before actually joining the team at the museum itself. And it really is a spectacular place.
It is. The architecture is gorgeous, but the experience is really cool. And they've attracted some amazing exhibits over the years, too. Some ancient artifacts. And it's about the immigrant experience. Would you, Keith, just explain kind of, people don't normally put this on their list of the places they visit regularly. It's sort of a hidden secret in Greektown there.
Yeah, we're located right there on Halsted Street, right at Halsted and Van Buren. We have a brand new building. Well, I guess it's almost 10 years old now.
It's gorgeous.
But a beautiful building. Architecturally significant.
Yeah. So we have...
And this is the National Museum.
This is the National Hellenic Museum. Right. We are the largest archive of oral histories of Greek American, their story coming to America. And especially in Chicago, you know, is a hub for immigrants. And we tell those stories.
And a very large Greek community here.
Yeah.
And it made such an impact on the development of the city. The not just the building of the city, but almost in every institution.
Absolutely.
And you don't find it like that. Like in New York, the Greek community in New York, and you'd imagine New York being, you know, such a gigantic metropolitan area. You can't find a good Greek meal. That's the most important thing. As a non-Greek, that's for me, this becomes a big issue.
Right.
But you can't also find that sort of sense of culture. You find it here. You find it on the west coast of Florida a little bit, right? But this is really this is sort of the mecca for Greek immigrants for the last 100 years.
Yeah, absolutely. And Greek, a lot of Greeks came here and they started restaurants. They started candy shops. They started ice cream parlors. They started grocery stores. So food is at the center. It's where people really came together, you know? And I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but they think Saganaki, you know, the flaming cheese.
Right. Is available in Greece.
It's a Chicago thing.
It's an invention.
It was invented in Chicago across the street
like
from where the
museum. Like deep
dish pizza. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Oh, so is the Euro. We've got the Euros was invented as well. And the device that you put it on, the stick that rotates it, the rotisserie was invented here in Chicago. And that went everywhere.
Absolutely.
Made the Euro friendly.
Yeah. Can you get it in Greece now?
I think there may be availability. Yeah, I've been there and you can see gyros, but they didn't start there. It started here.
Right. It was probably prepared, not mass produced. You know, it's a dish that it's like a street food. Yeah. And the Dove Bar, a lot of people don't know. Dove Bar invented by Greeks here in Chicago. At a canister.
So many things.
Yeah.
So many things.
Modern
civilization, Socrates. I mean, we could go on and on. But the museum experience is really tremendous. And this event, Kuzina, is when the chefs come together. And you all cook, bring out your best, and everybody comes and eats and enjoys the whole thing. Jesus, do you know have you been part of it before?
Well, yeah, actually, I think I was part of it the first year that they done it.
Oh.
Actually, we're talking about early, it was in 2012.
2012.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I participated with Leros Centeno. it was the first year, and I mean, it was a great and an amazing experience.
It is.
People all over the place, restaurant all over the place, great food. I mean, it was incredible.
And when the weather's nice, they have that awesome panoramic view up on the rooftop, one of the best outdoor venue spaces in the city anywhere. You just go up there and you can see the skyline. You're just far enough away that you can really capture it. Hopefully the weather will be good because it's next Thursday, the event, right, Cucina?
Yep, it's Thursday, November 7th.
It's always a beautiful night in Chicago, no matter what. Sometimes, you know, right after Halloween, it's bad around Halloween, then it gets nice for a couple of weeks. Let's just go with
Let's
that.
Let's hope so. Yeah, Let's hope so.
You have heaters, right?
Yeah, we will.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you have an indoor space that people can, that's where all the food's going to be.
Most of the event is indoors in Calamos Hall on the first floor. So, yeah, but you can have, you can go through all four floors of the museum and go through the galleries, and we're going to have all of our exhibits open. We're going to have wine tastings. Our resident scholar is actually a sommelier, so she's going to be talking about the connection between Greek myth and legend and Greek wines.
Mm.
And that'll be cool. And then also this year, we're going to have Diane Kochelis, who is the star of My Greek Table. She's going to be signing her book, and she's going to be talking about the food of the island Ikarina.
Oh, very cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
So I love that. And it's, remind us, it's
I
not,
didn't know what that meant.
It's not all Greek food, really. It's a sort of a twist on it, or is there some like modern types of Greek? I mean, it doesn't all feel like it's traditional Greek food when I go there.
Well, yeah, and my personal experience is I'm coming from Italian restaurant, so we're going to add a little bit to the Greek to our the dishes we're going to sell in this place. As we know, Italy is very close to Greece.
Oh, yeah.
So many neighbors.
Oh, similar influences there. You got the olive oil.
Exactly. Jesus, I think we're going down a bad road here.
Why?
Well, because you get the Italians and the Greek, like the who invented in terms of the
food. That's very clear. The Greeks invented it, then the Italians stole it. That's what we know.
This
is what our yayas teach us.
This is what I'm going with. We're going totally down the wrong road here. But every once in a while, the Italians go, hey, they have an expression for that. Same face, same culture thing that they say about the Greeks and the Italians. And then they have a couple drinks, and next thing you know, the fists start to fly. And it's an argument about this and about that. It's a whole thing. But all I know is that Greek food is absolutely delicious. You cannot get it anywhere else in the United States. I can get it here in Chicago. And down on your street on Halsted,
which is great places.
Still Greek town. There's still some amazing places. But then some of those places are going away so they can build gigantic towers. Mm-hmm. Like all those investors who've been sitting on that land, those families have been sitting on that land for 100 years, they've decided that they're moving it now.
The neighborhood's in transition for sure all around the museum there. You see the cranes up and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's a growing neighborhood. You know, West Loop is expanding all the time. But, you know, the great thing is it kind of underlines, for me, it underlines the need for a museum. So
for sure.
We preserve that culture, preserve that heritage, make sure that that story isn't forgotten and that it's told. It's kind of influences us day to day because we see all this change happening around. And here we are, a museum that is dedicated to preserving and telling those stories. So, it's a good time to be in my line of work.
And Channel 11 did that great piece like 4 or 5 years ago about the Greek story in Chicago. You know, they did that. There's Jeffrey Barrett.
I think I was part of their pledge drive for that particular launch.
I'm surprised to hear that.
No, I was helping out the WTTW.
It's a great story. Because you learn these amazing things. And there's still a pipeline of people coming over from Greece and from that part of the world, right? From the Southern Europe. And it's just an amazing contribution. It's changed everything. We like to think of it in food terms. That's where it all starts. But you think about how many people involved in business, major players, people who are second generation, first generation, second generation, and now third generation, people who are community leaders and all that who've come through that experience. It really is a very, very special thing. And the great Greek Orthodox churches and cathedral here. I mean, that is when you look at just the art of that, it's amazing.
Absolutely. So. And, you know, it's really interesting, too. And I think that it's part of Greek culture and it's part of Hellenism to embrace others, to embrace and share your pride in what the Greeks have contributed to society and share it with other people. And, you know,
And then eat.
And then eat.
Right. And then make sure everyone eats a lot.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
tell them to eat some more.
We have like 300 students in our Greek school on Saturday afternoons. And,
how about that? That's
and
awesome.
A lot of them are just kids from the neighborhood that aren't Greek. Too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting.
They want to learn the language.
They want to learn the language.
They went in. I don't blame them for wanting in. Because there's, you know.
Well, back in the day, you had to force your kids to go to Greek school. And now they people want to learn different languages. And that's amazing that you have that kind of programming there.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've heard great things about it.
Yeah, it's really popular.
All right. So if you want to take part in this, it's the National Hellenic Museum. It's Kozina, Kouzina, if you want to look that up on the interwebs. Or you can go to nationalhellenicmuseum.org. So look at, you know, Hellenic Museum Chicago. You'll see all that. On your website has all the information for this. It's a fundraiser. How much is it at the door?
It's $125 at the door, but if you buy tickets in advance, it's $100.
All right.
Totally worth it. Open bar.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Open bar from 6:30 to 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
Keith McCormickopoulos, thank you for being here.
And what are you going to do with Jesus' name? Chef Jesus?
Jesus Constantino, thank you so much for being here. Constantinopoulos. Yes. Okay. Appreciate it. All right. Thank you. Let's check in with Lauren Lapko. What's happening? I think that means it's ours. We got news coming from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. In just about, I don't know, 6-7 minutes maybe. I'm not good with the timings. And we're swallowing here from the this is really interesting. So the Hellenic Museum sent over an Irish guy and a...
Irish-Mexican guy.
Right, and a Mexican-Mexican guy to serve us food that is not really Greek in its origins.
And no, it's a little bit of a... They're supposed to do a twist. Each restaurant that participates doesn't necessarily have to be Greek, but they're supposed to deliver some kind of a twist on Greek cuisine.
Okay.
But that's not what you're tasting over there, I see.
I see. And it's interesting, and I think that this thing was a front for a robbery. I'm not sure...
You think they took... Should we check for our purses?
Yes, go check their office and see if they stole the Carnarvon wagon.
No. These are good guys. And it's a great event. Cuisine is an awesome event. I've gone many years.
Whatever they brought in, it's delicious.
It is. It is. And it's tasty.
I'm getting a little sleepy, though, right now. I don't know what's going on. All right, I do need to tell you first of all, we just found out, we've been talking about this White Claw way too much around here.
Yeah,
we should be invested in it. It's a big the guys who do White Claw, they're for real. I mean, this is like a big company. It's Mike's Hard Lemonade.
Yeah,
and, which has always been a lot of fun. Always been a lot of fun. So we're big fans of what the whole thing is. We have fun, but that's because we can't. There apparently is some competitor now out in the western suburbs. Now, I'm not sure that this is the best name ever for
what are they, spiked seltzers in general?
Yes.
Is that the category we're dealing with
hard
now?
Hard seltzer, they call it.
Hard seltzer.
Right. I knew a guy named Jimmy Seltzer, and that would have been a really bad thing. City Water is the name of this. City Water.
Ew.
Yeah.
Just think of water runoff going down a drain. When
yeah.
That.
I think of the river. It's probably going to hurt your stomach just as much.
Yeah, I don't know.
It doesn't conjure up great thoughts.
No, I want to, you know what? We need to talk to the marketing people here. This is going to compete with White Claw and Truly. Right, isn't that the other big
Truly
deal?
Truly is big on the West Coast, but I'm starting to see it everywhere. Like the grocery stores here, they're stocking up. Because White Claw, didn't it kind of go, it was hard to get toward the end of the summer there. I don't know if that was just a marketing ploy, but that was what was being reported.
I have yet to have been in a store where there isn't a mountain of White Claw.
I know.
Where you walk in and there's they do this thing where they just have boxes on a table. And the table wasn't there before. I mean, I got to give White Claw all the credit in the world for doing
this. They know what they're doing.
Because they have at my local Mariano's, over by Mariano's.
Mm-hmm, by there.
Or you go over by Jules. You got the same thing. But at Mariano's, they got a gigantic square table. And the thing is high as it's like a gigantic White Claw Jenga game. Like you pull a case out.
Don't take that one.
I don't want that one to go. Look out. I think the problem is that certain flavors were in shorter supply than others. Right, I think that was
right. The
really
little 6-packs or 4-packs, whatever they have.
Yeah, and it is a thing. It really has become a thing.
Well, now it just seems like all the other beverage companies are jumping in. They're all trying to come up with their thing, their seltzer.
Definitely, but I guess this goes to show: are people really
brand loyalists, or are they going to stick with what they've had already, which is probably White Claw or Truly?
Well, I think the White Claw, let's be honest, of the ones I have tried, White Claw is the best.
It is so good because you don't realize there's alcohol in it, and it doesn't taste overly sugary or anything. It just is like, hey, it's a nice summer drink.
Well, based on the taste test that I did as someone that doesn't like seltzer water at all, from what I remember, the Trulies have more of a fruity, kind of juicy flavor and less bubble, and then the White Claw has more of that bubble and seltzer taste.
Is it bad to pour the White Claw over ice and add, you know, maybe a little something extra?
That's like a vodka or something?
Like vodka? Because I definitely have never done that. I've definitely never done that. How bad do you think that is for the human anatomy?
Well, I think, actually, it's not really a question of the human anatomy, because it's probably all bad. But I think what it says about where you are in life.
Or in your day.
Well, the first time I had one, I show up and it was in the fridge. I didn't realize there was alcohol, and I thought it was just like a mixer. So I pour, and my buddy's like, oh, you're trying one of those White Claws? I'm like, what is White Claw? I just put vodka and some seltzer stuff over ice.
We had some people over, and someone just brought it. It put it in with the other cans, and I thought the same thing. It was right next to the LaCroix. I'm like, all right, I'll grab one of those. Right. So that'll fool you.
Yeah, that was a fun night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you got to be sort of know what you're doing there
for planning purposes. Yeah. You really do.
I got to say that I might have done that with Mike's Hard Lemonade a few times.
Intentionally though.
That's a good mixer.
Yeah, no, that is an excellent mixer. I know. And we're not supposed we are supposed to be responsible.
Yes.
We are?
Yes.
What have we been responsible?
I don't know, but I'm going to start it right now.
When did that messaging come out?
Exactly. Anyway, well, we want to thank, we just want to thank the entire, whoever came up with this idea, we want to thank them. All right, Andrea Darlis and the Reporters is starting at 7 o'clock after the news at the top of the hour, which is, of course, taking place in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and that comes your way in 2 little minutes.